show. Tomorrow is an awesome show with the whistleblower Michael German, former FBI agent who was fired for exposing FBI fraud and incompetence about an investigation involving white supremacist organizations and Islamic terrorist organizations. This is a very special inside scoop. Do not miss tomorrow. For now, this is Mark Levine signing off.
You're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. The Senate voted to cut the number of guest workers from 400 to 200,000. From 400 to 200,000 as part of a new immigration bill, Washington lawmakers narrowly approved a bill to impose strict penalties for price gouging at the pump. The bill calls for fines of up to $150 million for corporations and $2 million in jail time for individuals found to be overcharging for oil and gas. The White House said the measure is a form of price controls and will urge President Bush to veto the bill. Monica Goodling, the Justice Department's former White House liaison, testified that Deputy Attorney General Paul McNulty is to blame for misleading Congress about the firings of U.S. attorneys last year. Goodling denies any involvement in the process. A former Coca-Cola secretary will serve jail time for conspiring to steal trade secrets. A federal judge ignored Joya Williams' pleas for mercy and gave her a longer sentence than recommended. Williams planned to sell the secrets to Pepsi for $1.5 million. Iraqi police have recovered the body of a man believed to be one of the missing U.S. soldiers kidnapped in Iraq 11 days ago. The commander of U.S. forces in Iraq says the military has not positively identified the body yet. A show of force in the Persian Gulf, 9 U.S. Navy warships, including 2 aircraft carriers, arrived today off the coast of Iran. 17,000 U.S. soldiers and Marines will conduct exercises to demonstrate the U.S.'s commitment to Gulf security. The latest war funding bill is now in Congress, and it does not contain a timetable for troop withdrawal. The measure, which is expected to pass, will provide over $100 billion of war funding and another $17 billion for domestic and military-related spending not requested by the president. A U.S. House committee is demanding that Bush administration account for billions of missing dollars allocated for Iraq's reconstruction project. The Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction says approximately $5 million a year is lost due to corruption. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We've got science and business news coming up next.
Huelhauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their local banking. I just wonder why you think it's important to bank in a local bank.
Because it's here in our community, in our area, and we tend to find that they have the best service for us. They are always there when we need them.
Do you like the idea that it's a local bank with big bank services and benefits?
You get all the benefits of the big banks, but you walk in, people know who you are.
Yeah.
Now, it's a community bank, but it's part of a network of banks.
Absolutely. They have the resources, but of course the personal touch of a local bank.
I am here once a week, yes.
Taking money out.
Taking money out and putting it in and taking it out.
So you're doing a lot of banking in here.
I carry it in wheelbarrow.
Above and beyond banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
Researchers say climate change could cause indigenous plant species to become extinct. The relatives of plants like the potato and the peanut could be threatened because of drought. California is the latest state to detect an insect-borne virus that kills tomato plants. Tomato crops in Florida, Georgia, and across Central America have been decimated by the disease. California produces 95% of the nation's processed tomatoes. A study of rainfall in the U.S. shows Mobile, Alabama is the wettest community in the nation, receiving more than 5 feet of rain annually. Pensacola, Florida, New Orleans, and West Palm Beach, Florida follow. Alaska and Hawaii were not included in the research. Stocks ended lower today after an afternoon sell-off. Financial analysts say the sell-off was sparked by former Fed Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan's comment that he feared a dramatic contraction in the Chinese stock market. And management from the Canadian aluminum company Alcan is encouraging shareholders to reject a $27 billion hostile takeover from U.S. rival Alcoa. The board chair of Alcan told shareholders the two companies have incompatible philosophies. Light sweet crude oil is trading at $65.51 a barrel, and gold is trading at $662.60 an ounce. The Dow ended down 14 points today, the NASDAQ down 11 points, the S&P down 2. This is QNN.
Okay, don't you stop America.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Alrighty then, about 7 minutes after the hour, I'm Bob Kincaid. Sorry about last night, everybody. Some of this stuff is unavoidable. We don't pull any punches here. We're ordinary. We are regular, everyday working stiffs. And things come up, and sometimes it is impossible to get to the microphone. So I apologize. But you know what? I'd rather be this than some drug-addled junkie sending my maid out to find me another 3,000 hits of Oxy. But, you know, the trade-off is that sometimes we have to attend to family issues. And that's what we did yesterday. But, of course, this is Wednesday. And you know...
Agnes is so slow.
You know what that means.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
Darn straight, it's prayer meeting. And we've got some nice, fitting prayer meeting kind of stories lined up this evening. Of course, it would be, it's hard to imagine doing a show this evening without talking a little bit about Marsha Brady Goes to Congress. I watched Monica Goodling, Marsha. And I just expected at any minute when Arthur Davis of Alabama asked her one of those tough questions that she was going to start screaming, "Oh, my nose! Oh, my nose! Oh, my nose!" I'm sorry. Ladies in the audience, I apologize. I think you know that I am not a sexist. I am not a chauvinist. I'm not a misogynist. But Monica Goodling is a bimbo. And a little Christian gold digger of the fundamentalist variety. Is there anyone out there in the feminist camp even that is willing to say that that woman was competent for the position she was in? Even a little bit? I don't think so. So we'll be talking about that a little bit. But you know, now I share stories with you from the everyday existence of our lives here at the mansion in the hills and hollers of West Virginia. And I share them because it's part of our reality. And we are, after all, proud members of the reality-based community. So, yesterday, the fact of the matter is, I took Agnes to the hospital. She was having terrible... I promise, dear, I'm not going to overinflate this. I won't dramatize it.
Thank you.
The fact of the matter is, she was having terrible pain in the middle of her chest, and you don't fool with that. You don't sit, because, you know, a lot of times when you well, you know, it'll go away. And it does, and there's a funeral after it. So we don't fool with that kind of thing. And so off we went to the hospital, to the ER. They promptly got her in there, took her vitals, and started checking her out and everything. And no, it was not her heart. It was her gut. Once again, another nasty case of gastroesophageal reflux disorder, or GERD. You know, GERD sounds as ugly as it is. But the thing with GERD is when you have a really nasty attack of it, it'll clutch your chest and make you do the whole Fred Sanford, "Elizabeth, this is a big one," thing. So they got her in there, got her laid down, started an IV, eventually came in and just gave her a lot of drugs to just whack her out of her mind. And I, in the meantime, because the kids were at school, I had to turn around, come back home, and get the kids off the bus. And make, you know, like I said, this is everyday America. There is nothing unique about what yesterday was for Agnes and me. It happens thousands of times a day, sometimes in much worse permutations, to people all over this country. And you have to figure things like, I don't want to leave my beloved wife's bedside, but I have to because I have to get the kids off the bus. Because we're parents, and that is our job. You know, and bless her heart, Agnes is looking up from the bed going, "It's okay, honey, you just go on, go get the kids, I'll be fine." So that's what I did. So I get the kids off the bus. Shame on me. I opted for fast food to feed them because I didn't know what was going on at the time. And I didn't have an opportunity to cook a 7-course meal like I'd like to have. So, you know, I gave them fast food. And I came back here and I picked up the phone and I dialed the hospital to talk and find out, you know, when I could come and get my wife. Or if I could come and get my wife, or if they were going to keep her overnight for observation. At this point, I did not know. So what happens, my hand to God, this is what happened, okay? See my hand on the radio? Yeah, okay. I call, and the, you know, I figured I'd just talk to one of the charge nurses, and they'd say, "Well, okay, you know, we're filling out the paperwork, you can come get her anytime, or we're going to keep her overnight, everything's fine, you know, we're going to move her to a room, we'll tell you what the room number is, yada, yada, yada." No, the ER doctor picks up the phone, and he's very somber-voiced, and he said, I said, "Well, I just wanted to find out what was going on with my wife." And he said, "Well, now bear in mind, the Agnes's blood work had not been done and had not come, it had been done. It hadn't come back. The results weren't available at the time I left." So I said, "Well, did you get her blood work back?" And the doc said, "Yes." And he took on that doctor voice. "Yes, we got her blood work back. And her enzymes were elevated." And I said, "Her cardiac enzymes?" "Yes, her cardiac enzymes were elevated." I said, "Really?" He said, "Yes, we're not 100% certain because we don't have all the diagnostic tools, but we think she's had a small heart attack. And we believe it would be beneficial for her to be catheterized. And we've already put her on a helicopter to CAMC Memorial Division Heart Center in Charleston." Now, I'm hearing all of this on the other end of the line sitting back here in the studio, and, you know, the oxygen is getting sucked out of the room. You know, where you just feel a little loopy and lightheaded and what the hell? And so he says, you know, I imagine they will probably start the surgery as soon as she arrives. And my response was to say, I just stopped and said, wait a minute, Doc. We're talking about my wife, the redhead, that had the chest pain, and you gave her the GI cocktail and stuff. And he goes, oh, wait a minute. Oh, your wife's fine. I was talking about somebody else's wife. I kid you not. I said, now, okay, so we're square on this. Agnes Kincaid does not have elevated cardiac enzymes. Oh, no, she's got GERD. You know, gastroesophageal reflux disorder. You're sure? Yes, I'm sure. I'm terribly sorry about that. I said, well, you know, I'm happy to have this news. But this is medicine in America. For all the technology and all the high power drain equipment and all the equipment that goes ping, we are one hair on a baboon's butt above bone in the nose, caveman shake the rattle medicine. Because you see, anytime you walk into a hospital in the United States of America, you have a 30% chance of them killing your ass. You have a greater chance, you know, I mean, here I am, I advocate, you know, sane gun ownership and whatever. You have a greater chance of being killed or maimed in a hospital than you do in any given year, on any given day, of being harmed in gun violence. And you have a greater likelihood of being killed, maimed, or harmed in a hospital than you do on any given day of being struck by lightning or hit by a car. One of the single greatest threats to any American's well-being is America's medical health care delivery system. Shall we talk about why that is this evening? Shall we talk about doctors who are overworked, hospitals that are understaffed, and insurance executives who get multi-million-dollar bonuses? What did State Farm's head man get a couple of years ago for his Christmas bonus? $28 million, something like that. What would $28 million do in terms of staffing physicians in rural hospitals? Now, I'm glad everything turned out okay for Agnes. I'm so glad. Because for about 15 seconds there, when I thought that my lovely wife was on a helicopter and headed to Charleston to have her chest cracked, I didn't know what in the world I was going to do with my world. Life as I knew it was coming to an end. Because her life is my life. And I love her like the air that goes into my lungs with every breath. As you love your loved ones. And then it's, oh, I'm sorry, your wife is fine. But my mind immediately, once the oxygen came back into the room, my mind went immediately to that other poor woman on the helicopter. And I wondered if they were going to be wheeling her into the cardiac surgery suite with her screaming, wait a minute, I told you, I sprained my ankle. Just you hush up, ma'am, we'll have that arterial blockage cleared in no time. And probably wake up missing a breast or a leg. This is the pathetic state of America's for-profit healthcare system. This is the effect of naked, unbridled, unregulated capitalism on the way we declare to deliver one of the most fundamental rights that an American citizen should have, and that is the right to have decent, competent medical care in crisis. And again, what happened yesterday was just a little screw-up. It was an oopsie. But people go into emergency rooms. People go into operating rooms. It's documented. Time after time after time, documented that women go into emergency rooms needing a mastectomy of the left breast, and they take off the right one. Surgery on the left knee, and they cut off the right one. Time and time and time and time again, this happens in America. And because of the fact that the right wing and their religious zealot Republican allies have been so damn successful, most of America now believes that it is the patient, the victim's fault when a doctor butchers them. Organizations like the so-called AstroTurf groups like the Campaign to End Lawsuit Abuse and front groups for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and front groups for the industry, the insurance industry, have gone full on for about 15 years now hollering tort reform. And of course, that's one of those sort of weird little tort. What the hell's a tort? I thought it was some sort of Austrian pastry. Linzer tort. Schwarzwalder Kirschtort. Nah, it's a civil wrong. It's when a doctor butchers you or somebody runs over you in a car. So, I remember when it was being discussed in Congress a few years ago, and George Bush said, these people who have sued their doctor, they've won life's lottery. Who would have won life's lottery yesterday if that had been my beloved wife mistakenly put on the helicopter to go have her chest cracked? Who wins life's lottery when that actually happens hundreds, if not thousands, of times all over the United States every year? You know, we need a national dialogue about how we train our doctors. You know, medical school internship and residency has more in common with fraternity hazing than it does with the training of a young scientist. And this all, and yet we can't have it. I mentioned Monday night that, you know, every time we try to have a legitimate discussion about, oh, you know, global warming, well, there's no such thing, and the Earth's only 5,000 years old. So you try to have the discussion about medical negligence and medical harm in the United States, and the other side comes back, did you hear about that woman? She got $3 million for pouring hot coffee on her hoo-hoo. You've heard that story. And, of course, you seldom hear the backstory that McDonald's and the jury knew that McDonald's had been warned time and time and time again that they kept their coffee at dangerously hot temperatures and that they had done so as a function of a cost-benefit analysis that said that permeating McDonald's with the smell of that coffee sold more coffee, even though it hurt people. And that's what the jury knew, and that's why they awarded the woman the money they did, because she had to have reconstructive plastic surgery over her entire pelvic genital region for third-degree burns. But you see, we don't get to find that out. It's just it's just right-wing talkers and people from the insurance industry and the United States Chamber of Commerce going out there saying, that dumb old lady couldn't even hold a cup of coffee and spilled it all over her, and the jury give her $3 million for it. Can you believe that? We have a runaway judicial system. And yet you never find any of the victims coming out and saying that they really didn't deserve to be compensated for the hell they were put through. I'm reminded of the story, the suit that was filed here in the last month or so over in Beckley in Raleigh County. The Baptist minister who, knowing full well that his faith told him that he would be consigned to the eternal flames of hell for committing suicide, who chose to end his life because of the hell he had been put through by having surgery performed on him without anesthesia. But you see, he and his family, if they get a jury verdict, George Bush will be happy to describe how they won life's lottery. Damn him and all his Republican pals born on third thinking they hit a triple. Damn them. I feel, although it would be easy to make it a comic tale of mistaken identity and so forth, and go, ha, 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 what happened yesterday. The fact of the matter is we were a hair away from the absolute destructive damnation of this little family. We were one more screw up away. And I worry and I wonder about the other poor lady who went to Charleston. I hope to God she got the help she needed. So, I know it's not Monica Goodling and it's not the capitulation of the Democrats in Congress on the war bill. But this story doesn't get nearly the airplay that it needs. Frankly, the Association of Trial Lawyers of America, the plaintiff's bar, complains all the time about how they can't get their story out, but they damn sure won't fund the ones who do it. Screw them. We're going to talk truth here. We're going to talk facts here, whether we're supported in what we do or not. Because the people we support are the folks who wind up in emergency rooms because a loved one is suddenly having chest pains. This is pro-family radio. This is pro-middle class, pro-lower class, pro-working people radio. It's pro-you radio. Because I know that you know right now as we're speaking how many times you yourself have been near to some level of disaster. Life-altering, reality-changing disaster. And all you can do is hang on through the ride and hope that the little train running through the funhouse finally comes to a stop and everybody gets to get off. So that's where we begin. We got a couple of lines open if you want to jump in. We'll go call by call by call when we come back. The phone number, of course, 877-443-2366, toll-free on your nickel. It's 304-658-5453. Email comes in to bob@headonradio.com. You are listening to America's liberal voice. You're listening to America's working voice. You're listening to The Horn, and I'm Bob Kincaid.
Yeah. The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
The difference between what I do on my show and what all the right-wing types do on their shows is very simple. I'm not going to lie to you. That doesn't mean you're going to agree with me about everything or that you're going to like hearing everything I have to say, but I will guarantee you that when I say something on my show, I say it because I mean it and I believe it, and I'm not just saying it to get you riled up and to boost my ratings. No potty mouth, no trash talking, no BS, just the straight truth as I see it, because the lies may sound good for a while, but the truth is there forever. It's not always pleasant, it's not always nice, sometimes it's hard to see through all the crap, but it's there. And that's what you're going to get from me, and that's why you should listen to my show. The Cup of Joe Radio Show, Mondays and Fridays from noon to 2 Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
You can see that in Alberta, diversity is very strong. You see people from different places, from different backgrounds, and we all have learned to live together. That's why Alberta is a great place to live.
We come from different places, and we have to accept each other because our backgrounds are different, our cultures are different, and we have to understand other people.
I think that our community, being as open as it is, just gives people a chance to really enjoy interaction between different cultures and really get to know each other without making any judgments.
Trabajando juntos podemos lograr la gran diferencia en la comunidad. That it means by working together we can make a big difference in our community.
To find out how you can make a difference, visit helpmakeadifference.com. This message is brought to you by the Government of Alberta and Global Television.
On someone, do it in the name of God. Kill your unknown brother, a sister, and your mother. Do it in the name of God.
26 and a half minutes before the hour.
If they are all wrong, if it makes you feel strong.
I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. For those of you wondering where I am in the chat room, I'm obviously not there. Having some real bad luck with computers over at this workstation these days. Had one fired up for a while that I was testing out and checking out. Went back to the one I'd been using for a while, and the little bastard's crashed. Oh, language. I got to watch the language. We have a guest in the studio this evening. She may decide to make herself heard, but little Liza is hanging out with us here. And so far, she's being very, very good. I think she likes hearing all the talking. So my apologies for not being in the chat room. Let's go to the phones. Alan is calling our over-the-road trucking buddy. He's either on the road or in Alabama. Hey, Alan.
Hello. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Pretty good. Hope your wife gets better.
Oh, I think she's going to be okay if we can just keep her away from the doctors.
Yeah. I know a man who went to the hospital with a virus and then got two other viruses when he was in the hospital and died.
It's a terrible place to be sick.
And his son is a doctor.
Oh, brother.
His son told me, he said, the hospital is the place you go to get sick.
Yeah, one of the things that... See, a lot of this stuff doesn't get talked about as much as it should because... We have problems in American hospitals now. They are breeding grounds for staph infections that will literally eat the flesh off of your bones, and they can't do anything about it because we have overloaded our society and our population with the antibiotics so that we just get better bugs out of it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Also, it's probably because of private enterprise also.
Sure. You know, there's... It might reduce the individual share quarterly profit by 0.1% of a penny if we took those extra measures to make sure that we kept everything nice and clean and sterile.
Yeah, I heard over in Great Britain they turned some of the hospitals over there to private enterprise and kind of messed things up.
Oh yeah, the conservatives there are hell bent on. Destroying Britain's, if I understand correctly, Britain's publicly funded healthcare system. You know, there's nothing that's good in a society that a conservative can't figure out a way to destroy.
Yeah. Hey, I was talking to a relative yesterday, and he's one of those that's listened to the conservatives for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to explain to him that we need to get over to a national healthcare system in this country. You know, and I told him that, like, I think there's 37 other countries that have a national health care plan, and I told him that we need one here. And his first response was, well, I don't trust the government.
God.
Typical crap. But I think he's slowly wising up when he's seeing all our debt, all our goods filling our stores from China. If conservatives are not on his side.
No, and they never will be, Alan. The uh-huh. Conservatives are on their own individual side.
Yeah. Well, you were talking about lawsuit abuse a while ago, and I think it's like majority of lawsuit law cases, I think, when it comes to medical claims,
mm-hmm.
the payout is like $40,000.
Yeah.
It's nothing like $1 million like they claim.
Oh, no, all of their numbers are fudged up, dummied up, ginned up, and faked. Among other things, what is identified as the lumpet factor, in other words, the number of people who get hurt and never do anything about it, is astronomical. There is no lawsuit crisis in this country. What there is an insurance company greed crisis.
Yeah. A lot of people have insurance now, are scared to even use it.
Well, exactly. The thing that went that was so... so thoroughly underreported in the whole bankruptcy screw over that the American people went through a couple of years ago was the fact that 70% of bankruptcies in this country have to do with destructive, catastrophic medical claims, and these aren't claims by people who had no insurance. It's people who have, an 80-20 policy and have a $100,000 procedure and wind up with, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 worth of debt, and that they wound up with after the so-called insurance company had so-called paid.
Yeah, and then they wind up going to bankruptcy, like you said.
Yeah, and this is one of those moments that made me really disgusted with the Democrats. Democrats got in bed with conservative Republicans to create that Bankruptcy Reform Act, and they made it so that American working people would have a harder time declaring bankruptcy, but they never did anything about corporate bankruptcy.
Yeah, and they go bankrupt just to put unions out of business.
Right. Yeah, I mean we've got several examples of that right here in West Virginia, and several examples over the country. You know, done exclusively to beat union pension claims.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of that's going on around your part of the country out here.
Yeah.
So those coal companies turn around and take mountaintops off.
Right.
To sell the coal to pollute the oil.
Well, not 30 miles from here was a coal company that was bankrupted, and lots of union jobs destroyed. A woman literally in the middle of chemo for breast cancer had her coverage removed. So you can just deal with it, honey. And then the thing was immediately, conveniently purchased by Massey Energy, who hired on a bunch of scabs, and they're mining coal like nobody's business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's lies about lawsuit abuse, just like there's lies about unions. Like, for instance, I heard about this story about this guy making coffee in a motorhome,
mm-hmm.
and he crashed. He's trying to make coffee while he's driving. He crashed his motorhome, and he sued. That never did happen, I hear.
No.
You heard about that?
Yeah, I did hear about that. You can go to, I think that's even on Snopes.com. Yeah, it's just a complete fabrication. And these things make the rounds, and the conservatives and right-wing talkers put it out there as gospel fact, and the little conservative followers and the people who listen on the radio go, well, golly. You know, I don't know. It's like there's a... it's like there's a demographic that listens to right-wing talk that's comprised entirely of the relatives of Gomer Pyle.
That's a good one. Hey, I heard another story from a trucker the other day. He said a guy took some clothes to the laundromat, and they couldn't find his pants, and then they found his pants later, like a month later or something like that. And then he wants to sue the laundromat for an ungodly amount of money. But I think the whole story was probably another one of those fabrications.
Nah, I read about that the other day. The guy's suing for like $8 million or whatever. And that's a publicity stunt, okay? That thing will never get anywhere. It won't. Uh-huh. It can't survive the judicial process, and it shouldn't. But the thing is, they take cases like that and use them as examples of everyday legal practices. The court systems in this country are not clogged, Alan, by... They're not clogged by people who are in red car, blue car accidents. The court system, the litigation dockets in this country are clogged up by companies suing other companies over contracts that they intentionally broke.
Yeah, they're suing each other.
Yeah. I've got a very good friend who is in the construction business, and, you know, he explained to me that they enter into an agreement expecting to have litigation out of it before the contract is ever completed, because that's just how business is done. And that takes up tons of judicial time. And it's a waste of the court's time. And it's all because these money-grubbing little SOBs are trying to beat each other out of the last nickel because they feel like it's some sort of... it's like some sort of intramural squad game back in their dear old college days.
Uh-huh. I was thinking that lawsuit reform probably won't affect companies suing companies.
Oh no, it doesn't. What it is, it's all fudged up under the rubric of tort reform and ending lawsuit abuse. But what it's about is ending the average citizen's access to the courts, closing the courthouse doors, and keeping corporate profits safe from the people that they hurt.
Screw in the middle class again.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, sorry about the language.
No, that's okay. There's no harm in that word. It's about an assault on working people. And there are lots of working people out there listening to right-wing radio who are actively pursuing their own damage.
Hey, I got a question to ask you.
Sure.
I was in a truck stop the other day, and there was a big jar there for people to put money in because one of the employees got sick without insurance. And I was thinking a much better thing to do to give money to, I mean, that would probably be a good thing to give money to help her, but one thing, the important thing to do is to give to an organization that fights to get us a health care program in this country. Do you know of such organizations?
Off the top of my head, Alan, no, I don't, but I know that they exist. It's just that a lot of them exist in such a way that they don't just do that issue. There's any number of organizations, and then, you know, there are individual politicians. If you go and you read the Dennis Kucinich's policy statement on it, he is very clear. Universal single-payer health care must be the way that we go, because it'll make life dramatically easier on business. It will attract new business to the United States. I mean, after all, we lost a couple of Toyota plants to Canada because Toyota realized that, you know, up there that's something they didn't have to factor into their cost. We've got to demand it of our politicians. You know, the idea of a collection jar. I mean, I always put, you know, whatever I get in change, I'll put in a jar like that because it seems like every counter has one of them these days.
Uh-huh.
And the idea that this was an employee of that truck stop and they're collecting money to pay for her medical bills, why wasn't her employer providing her with decent, meaningful health care?
Yeah, and I would like to mention the employer if I can.
Go right ahead.
Pilot Truck Stop, one of the biggest truck stops in the country, can't pay their employee insurance.
That's just it's disgusting, isn't it? And yeah, the pilot rakes in money hand over fist, don't they?
Oh yeah, you drive by one, they're always packed.
Hey, let me shift gears on you for a minute there, Alan. You go back and forth around the country, right?
About three quarters of the country.
You ever go through Missouri?
Oh yeah.
Have you ever stopped at a truck stop? It's at the Kingdom City exit called Gaspers.
No, Gaspers.
Yeah, it's between St. Louis and before you get to Columbia on I-70. If you ever find yourself in that direction, I promise you at about 1 o'clock in the morning, they have the best biscuits and gravy anywhere in the world.
And you can't remember the name of the truck stop?
Yeah, it's Gaspers.
Well, you know, that's a coincidence because I'm going to be driving right through there tomorrow.
If it's anywhere around breakfast time, you owe yourself those biscuits and gravy, Alan.
Okay, I'll get on the CB radio and try to locate that.
I hope they're still there. It's the Kingdom City, Missouri exit. I think it's US 50. It's the intersection of US 54 and I-70. And
okay.
Just mind-bogglingly. I mean, if you know, you're an Alabama guy, you've got to be into your biscuits and gravy.
Oh yeah, love those homemade biscuits.
Oh, and these things are cat heads too. I mean, they are big. And the gravy they make it fresh every day, and wow, just, well, it's part of the reason I have high cholesterol.
my landlady that I had for 20 years, she grew up during the Roosevelt era, and she made great biscuits, and she loved to talk about Franklin Roosevelt.
Oh, bless her heart.
She's a real nice person.
Indeed. Well, you drive safely, Alan. If you find that, let me know. I'd love to know that Gaspers is still in existence out there, and it's one way to not go to pilot.
Okay. And I hope your wife starts feeling better.
Well, thank you very kindly. She's got some of that fun purple pill medicine, so I think it's going to make things dramatically better.
Okay.
All right. You take care and drive careful.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye now. It's our buddy Alan who has the high-tech setup in his rig where, as long as he's got cell service, he can listen to the head-on radio network anywhere he goes. I gotta make that happen for us because it would be so nice to get free of the terrestrial radio jukebox. Let's go talk to Susan in Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
How are you?
Severely ticked.
Well, yeah, for about six dozen different reasons, right?
Yeah. Well, just to just real quick, if people will go to the main blog on the main page of the Head On Radio Network, over on the headlines there is a headline that says "Mad at Congress, take the Iraq boat pledge." Click on that and read it, and if you agree with it, do what it says. But as to the topic at hand, let's see, shall we discuss the 3-foot retractors left inside of people that spawns flesh-eating bacteria? I could give you a list of horrors. Would not quit.
Right.
I have a problem with the entire... Well, I don't like doctors. At all. My idea of a good day is when I can fire one. Yeah, I've got... You know, it took them 3 years to diagnose me. And I figured that was 3 years too long. All they had to do was read a stupid book. I've got the same little issue that Agnes has, so periodically I have what seems to be a heart attack.
Yeah.
Then I get to go drink the cocktail.
Yeah, and it's green and nasty.
Yeah.
What is it? It's a mixture of Maalox, Donatol, and lidocaine.
Yeah. And it's disgusting. Oh, it got it. Just
under tooled leather, yeah. Hey, Grandpa, what's for supper? Yeah.
Yeah, it's just disgusting. But it does do the work, do the job. This whole healthcare system is just so... I think the only term you could use for it is foobar.
Yeah, it's busted. It's broken. And the thing is, it's broken because of the insurance companies. It's broken because of the medical equipment companies. It's broken because of the for-profit hospital corporations like HCA, the Frist family's little nightmare. But it's also broken because of the way we train doctors.
Yeah. I will never understand how someone figured that you can learn how to do brain surgery or whatever it is, cardiac surgery, if you are so exhausted you fall asleep standing up.
Right.
How do you learn in those situations?
Well, and you know, how many, part and parcel of the massive problem that America has with medical negligence is exhausted young physicians who are being, you know, their job is to sit and deal with the folks who come in who by dint of necessity have to use the emergency room as urgent care or as any old trip to the doctor.
Right.
And they see them and screw ups are bound to happen, aren't they?
Oh yeah. My last little trip to the ER when I made my fast descent down the stairs, we didn't know if I'd broken my knee or not, so Donald had to haul me into the emergency room. I learned a lesson. Next time I'm calling a bloody ambulance because we came in under our own power, sort of, kind of, in my case.
That meant you got the 8-hour wait.
No.
No?
That meant they assumed, A, that I was a junkie, and B, even though I was insured, I wasn't worth bothering with. My so-called doctor was so new that the prescription he wrote, instead of a DEA number, had the word pending.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Instead of being put, you know, how most emergency rooms have all this nice diagnostic equipment?
Mm-hmm.
They said, we're going to fast-track you. Well, I had never had that done before, because before I had always come in via ambulance. Ah, guess what? That means they're going to stick you in a windowless little room with no diagnostic equipment, and you're going to sit there until they remember, oh, hey, wait a minute, we stashed somebody in there. Never mind the fact that you are in agony, that you need x-rays.
Yeah.
And,
oh, and the thing is, it's the stuff that comes out of, you know, you're lucky because they didn't do anything worse.
Yeah. I'm really lucky that, you know, he didn't really screw me up.
Yeah.
But at that, he told me a whole bunch of misinformation, because when I learned a long time ago with doctors, never deal with flunkies. So the first thing I did was I got in to see my orthopod.
Right. But you see, there's such a coordinated campaign to keep anybody from seeing the truth about all this, Susan.
Yeah.
You know, I can't tell you the number of times that I've heard, you know, for instance, liberals say, well, you know, the problem with our healthcare system is that there's too many Mexicans in the emergency room.
Horse pocky.
But no, I mean, I'm not telling you that. I mean, this is the arguments that they use.
Yeah, and it's a crock. The problem with our health system is the way it's run. And the biggest problem with our health system is the people running it, and that's the insurance companies.
You know, it frankly, it should not cost a tenth of $1 million or more to get through medical school. that's just it's unjustifiable.
No, it's ridiculous, and it shouldn't cost. I'm just cringing at the thought of what it's, you know, hubby spent that week in the hospital. I'm just cringing at what we're going to get in the way of the bill, because he only was covered by Medicare.
Well, I'm not gonna offer an opinion on that, because
I don't know what they pay anymore.
I don't either.
No. Yeah, so we could get hit really big. You know, and the bad thing is, we have one asset. We're living in it.
Yeah, and well, thanks to the mugwump Democrats and the soulless, heartless, motherless Republicans, you'll have to work like a son of a gun to hang on to that. If bankruptcy
yeah.
should have to become an option, I understand completely. Susan, we're at the we're close to the top, so I need to roll on. But thank you so much, and you know all I can do is
piece of advice for people.
Yeah.
Never believe a doctor. If you have a question, ask a pharmacist.
Or ask a nurse.
Yes.
You know, because this isn't any sort of a, you know, I love the medical profession. I love the idea of trying to help people in extreme situations and in extremis and in the midst of the most fragile times of life. But what we've done is we've created a system that pits them in an adversarial position against the people they're trying to that they're trying to help, and people blame it on the lawyers. But the fact of the matter is that whole problem has been created by the insurance industry, and
yeah.
pharma, and the medical equipment industry, and the HCAs of the world.
Yeah. So, the pharmacist and the nurse don't have an axe to grind. Ask them. They're not going to steer you wrong.
Right. Well, thanks a lot, Susan. I hope everything's okay. And
I'm just glad
Agnes wasn't on the helicopter.
You and me both.
You take care. Give our
love
best
to
Donald. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. We are close to the news. Your thoughts are more than welcome on this. And, of course, your thoughts on other things as well. You're certainly free to bring up Monica Brady. I mean, Monica Goodling, Marcia Brady. They all just run together for me. Of course, our good friend Mark Levine in his program just before this one did a lovely job of excoriating the spineless wimp weenie Democrats for capitulating to George Bush. Oh, wait a minute, you might call us liberal or something. We better just give you what you want. I mean, God, it's like the entire Democratic caucus woke up with horses' heads in their beds or something. I don't know. Little Liza seems to be chiming in right now. You're liable to hear from her over the course of the evening, a little bit there in the background. But by the way, there's the issue of Jerry Falwell's funeral. We got to talk about that, and we're going to talk about all of it in the next coming couple of hours. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to the voice of working America. This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. Iraqi police say the body of a man they pulled from the Euphrates River this morning was one of three kidnapped U.S. soldiers. U.S. military officials have not yet identified the man. The Associated Press reports that a U.S. official who wishes to remain anonymous says a second body was found nearby. Troops, meanwhile, are continuing to comb the area south of Baghdad for their missing comrades. President Bush says Osama bin Laden is setting up terrorist cells in Iraq with the intention of carrying out attacks on American soil. Speaking at a U.S. Coast Guard commencement, the president said 9/11 was just a down payment on violence yet to come. Critics say the president is selectively revealing sensitive intelligence to justify the Iraq war. 9 U.S. Navy warships, including 2 aircraft carriers, arrived today off the coast of Iran. 17,000 U.S. sailors and Marines will conduct exercises to demonstrate the U.S.'s commitment to security in the Persian Gulf. The Pentagon appears to be preparing to double the number of U.S. combat forces in Iraq this year. Duty tours of troops already in Iraq will also be extended. The latest war funding bill is now in Congress, and it does not contain a timetable for troop withdrawal. The measure, which is expected to pass, will provide over $100 billion of war funding and another $17 billion for domestic and military-related spending not requested by the president. A U.S. House committee is demanding the Bush administration account for billions of missing dollars allocated for Iraq reconstruction projects. The Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction says approximately $5 billion a year is lost due to corruption. Many of the panel's members blame the Iraqi government for the losses. Lawmakers voted 74-24 in favor of cutting the number of foreign workers allowed into the U.S. under the new immigration bill. The Senate voted to cut that number from 400,000 to 200,000 a year. Washington lawmakers narrowly approved a bill to impose strict penalties for price gouging at the pump. The bill calls for fines of up to $150 million for corporations and $2 million for individuals. The White House calls the measure a form of price control. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business News, next.
If you're a news junkie, there's a book you must read called Don't Mess with the Press, How to Write, Report, and Produce Quality Television News. Don't Mess with the Press is a textbook for journalism students and a handbook for people already in the business. While written primarily as an instructional guide, Don't Mess with the Press is also useful for people who follow the news closely, who want to understand how news decisions are made by quality reporters to ensure they get the best news coverage possible. Don't Mess with the Press was written by Tony Seaton, founder and executive producer of the Quality News Network. Tony began his broadcast journalism career in his teens, eventually covering Watergate, 6 elections, 5 space shots, and a wide range of general news. He also produced Barbara Walters news interviews for ABC. Ordering information for Don't Mess with the Press can be found at qualitynewsnetwork.com. Visit our website and click on the Don't Mess with the Press link.
Researchers say climate change could cause indigenous plant species to become extinct. The uncultivated relatives of farmed plants like the potato and the peanut could be threatened because of drought. And California is the latest state to detect an insect-borne virus that kills tomato plants. Tomato crops in Florida, Georgia, and across Central America have been decimated by the disease. California produces 95% of the nation's processed tomatoes. A study of rainfall in the U.S. shows Mobile, Alabama is the wettest community in the nation. It receives more than 5 feet of rain annually. Stocks ended lower today after an afternoon sell-off. Financial analysts say the sell-off was sparked by former Fed Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan's comments that he feared a dramatic contraction in the Chinese stock market. Google has acquired a stake in biotech company 23andMe for nearly $4 million. The firm provides customers with information about their genetic makeup. Light Sweet Crude is
question about solving a problem when the other side doesn't believe it's a problem in the first place, that it's just part of some grand master scheme to make a day laborer from 2,000 years ago magically reappear in the clouds. How can you work on a problem like nuclear proliferation when the other side can't wait for the mushroom clouds to blossom? How can you work on a problem like world hunger, like Darfur, when the loonies who say that they deserve to be heard think that, well, if those children starve to death, they just go back to heaven as long as they're less than 12. And if they're older than 12, then they just go to hell because that's where God created them to put them. And then they'll sit there and give you the "for God so loved the world" the monkey shine. Do you see the problem? I don't want to talk in a vacuum. I'm not going to make assumptions that only liberals or progressives or whatever. I prefer to call us normal people. I don't want to exclude anybody from the debate, but if I sit down and we start talking about the gigatons of carbon dioxide put in the air by burning the coal, it doesn't advance the discussion for the other side to come back and say, no, it doesn't. Jesus said so. That doesn't help. It isn't working toward a solution. That's mere gainsaying. It doesn't even qualify as the argument. So, I read stories like this babble fest at Draw Spunky University, Mooney U, whatever you want to call it.
Destroy another man's country in the name of George W. Punk Bush, period.
Yep.
I am sick to death of Marines coming back with pictures of defiled women and murdered children and calling themselves Marines because they are not my Marine Corps.
Well, see, that's another thing. Your core got broken, Bob.
Yeah, it got broken, and that punk that's running the
broken
country right
now. You
know,
it was a couple of years ago, at least, when the story came out about the old line sergeants whose job was to make new Marines out of recruits. When it turned out that we were so hard up for troops in Iraq, that we took those guys who knew how to teach a young man or a young woman how to be a Marine, and we took them and we just got them killed. And so, the non-commissioned officers, the sergeants and so forth, that's the backbone of the Corps. It's the backbone of any military.
It's always been, Bob.
You know, all the way back to the Legionnaires. It's
all the way back to Tun's Tavern. Do you know where Tun's Tavern was?
Offhand, I do not.
Okay, Philadelphia.
Okay.
It was back in 1775. That's before 1776, when the Continental Congress invented this idea of a constitution, or not even a constitution, just a declaration of independence. The United States Marine Corps was born before the Declaration of Independence, Bob. And we have served proudly and with respect to all. But now, Bob, I have to admit to you, I am appalled at what my Marines are doing in the name of George Bush. They're not doing it in the name of the United States of America. They're not doing it in the name of the Constitution of America. They're doing it in the name of George Bush. Just like these dinos, these Democrats in name only, are doing in Congress and in the Senate today. They are not Americans, Bob. They are traitors to the Constitution. Period. I have on my left hand, on my ring finger right now, and that is a United States Marine Corps ring. And I am sad to say that I denounce them as traitors, every one of them. I don't give a hoot in hell. I mean, the only one that stands before me, and I stand beside him, is a gentleman that stood and said that war
is a racket.
Is a racket. And what was his name?
Smedley Butler.
Yes. Thank you, sir, because I served on that base. Okay?
Yeah.
That was in Okinawa, and it was the Smedley D. Butler base. And if any man, any Marine, understands me, then they got to know that I'm ready to fight them. I'll fight them on this earth or in hell or on in heaven if that's where they want to think they're going. But I'll see them all in hell if they cannot stand and just say no more. Not one more inch. We will not go into this nation and destroy these people for any gall-dang reason whatsoever. But I almost said the GD word, because I will not kill another human being unless that human being attacks the United States of America. And guess what? Iraq, Iran...
never did. Not gonna.
Never.
But of course, there. Let's see. I believe it's the USS Nimitz, the USS John C. Stennis, and the USS Bonhomme Richard are within spitting distance of the Iranian coast, even as we speak. The Bonhomme Richard is chock-a-block with landing vehicles and has aboard it a contingent of 17,000 Marines.
Bob Kincaid, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
If a man stands at your doorstep with a gun and threatens your family, will you not defend them? Will you not defend some man that comes to your house, as we have gone to the coast of Iran, and threaten them? Will you not defend your family?
What else? What would?
Will you not?
I mean, isn't this? Yeah,
and life?
Bob, isn't this aggression? Isn't this a deliberate attempt to goad Iran into a shooting war?
It's not theirs. They haven't come to. Where are you at?
There's no
West Virginia.
Yeah, there's no Iranians rowing up the canal.
No, they don't have their warships off your coast. They don't even have them on the West Coast. They're not even threatening Los Angeles, for God's sake.
No.
They're not threatening anybody.
No, but we're
threatening them with
right.
Armada, like what was that back in the day when they had the gunpowder thing down there in England, going to blow up the Parliament?
No, the Spanish Armada,
the Spanish Armada was coming. They're coming up to England.
And they were fortunate with some very very bad weather.
Yeah,
and they were and the English were better sailors.
Bob, people. All the people of this earth have to realize that this Nazi, this filthy, Republican fascist dictatorship that has enveloped the United States of America must be just rejected. We must get rid of them. We got to get rid of them, Bob.
Yeah.
Please.
And see, see, at the same time that we're over there poking Iran with a sharp stick, because the Straits of Hormuz are very narrow, and it would be very easy to get into Iranian territorial waters, at which point, the shooting starts. But they announced today, Mostafa Mohammad Najjar said that Iran will resist any threat and give a powerful response to its enemies. And he's the defense minister of Iran. There were remarks made to mark the 25th anniversary of the recapture of an Iranian port, okay? This is designed specifically to goad Iran into a war. They want it so bad they're aching for it, because that way they could end all of this discussion in Congress about whether to fund the Iraq War, because Congress, with the attention span of a Cocker Spaniel, would be forced to start talking about funding the Iran War.
What a... Oh, this did. Huh. Oops. I bet.
You okay?
Where? Oh, up there. Oh, it did. Goodness gracious. Are you on, Bob?
Yeah, I'm right here, but we got to roll. We're at break time, Bob.
Okay, but I was going to say something.
Okay.
We get cut off here shortly, just a little bit ago, but, you know, I'm just trying to put food on my family, Bob.
And that's all any of us are doing, Bob.
Yeah, it's a fact. And the thing is, we must stick. Oh, what is that? What's that beautiful song I've heard? Okay?
Yeah.
We must hang together, or they will surely hang us one by one.
Truth in that, Bob. We got to roll, brother.
Good night, my friend.
Take care.
Yeah.
Bye now. We'll be back with more of your phone calls to 877-443-2366 or 304-658-5453 right after this. This is The Horn.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to The Horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
As I understand the conflict right now between the president's bill and the one supported by the Democrats, John McCain and Lindsey Graham, is that John McCain and Lindsey Graham and the Democrats say that the bill, the standards we use, should be the standards that are the same as the treaty we signed, the Geneva Convention signed after World War II that every civilized nation follows. And the president is saying, that restricts me too much. That's too humane. I want to be able to do other things. I won't say what they are, but sources tell us that things like waterboarding, you know, drowning people, putting them in 50-degree weather. And the question, I think, is should we hold the United States to the same standards that England holds itself to, that Canada holds itself to, that other civilized nations hold themselves to?
Get the view from inside the Beltway with Mark Levine on the Radio Inside Scoop. Right here, 2 to 3 p.m. weekdays on the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
This is Billy Shears. Join me every Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Boxed Up with John Fox. Each week, I'll feature an artist and a song with a little commentary. We'll examine why music plays such an important role in our social and political climate. We'll try and make it fun, informative, and entertaining. Join us every Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn, with John Fox on Boxed Up. And for music with political commentary by great liberal minds, check out my website at unreportednews.net. This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
My 19th was sometime at the, you know, in the, at the end of the 80s. God. I kid. Let's go back to the phones. Our good friend David calling from Maine has been waiting a while. Hey, David, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling. Thanks for waiting.
Those damn immigrants will be in the waiting room if you got universal health care.
Yeah, I know.
They'll all be in there. Is that what you want?
Yeah, you won't be able to get a Band-Aid for the Mexicans. You've heard it.
I mean it's an endless discussion, and then, you know, if you really want to end the conversation, just say, where do you get your research? I just know it.
I've seen them.
I've seen them where. I don't feel like talking about this no more. that's really all it comes down to.
I won't talk about this no more.
Yeah, that's what you have to do. As they say in New York, shut the fools down. Shut them down. That's what you got to do. You know, I was thinking about this healthcare thing, and I think this will put in perspective of the hilarity of it, of the tragic hilarity of it. And one of the things is that Michael Moore apparently gave to this is funny, but it's an eye-opening moment too. He gave to his harshest critic on the web of an anti-Michael Moore site to help save his wife, who was deathly ill. He gave her $12,000, Bob.
Jeez, what a decent guy.
And a lot of people on the anti-Moore site are thinking this is a conspiracy because this part's going to be in the film, and they're going to make him look bad. Because I guess Michael Moore did it anonymously. And he has a phone message on his voicemail of allegedly Michael Moore, and he's explaining why he gave him the money or whatever, and he's just checking on his wife. But again, this points to a bigger issue: the same type of damage that is going to happen to the left side or the liberal side or the progressive side is going to happen completely to the right side.
Yeah.
And the more and more you think about it, it's like there's the only thing that they can come up with is conspiracy after conspiracy of social, the same virus that people put in the 40s and the 50s and the 30s about socialized medicine, it's still there. It doesn't even make sense. And then what's even worse is you'll have someone from Canada who takes this extremely partisan side where he's saying, well, I just want people to know that in Canada it's not all great. That's not what we're saying. And you know, when you think about it, it's like, you really have to put a lot of time and a lot of energy and effort into a system like this, and it's not just going to instantly light up like Las Vegas or something, just flick a switch. But we do have a great plan, and we can follow in evidence with a program like Social Security.
Yeah, the evidence is there to suggest that we can run it quite well. You know, if you factor out the fraud, you know, and that's crimes that are committed by greedy healthcare operations, Medicare is run very, very soundly. So that tells us that if we funded it more and took in all of America and took away the health care debts of, you know, say, Chrysler and Ford and GM, these people, these companies that are being crushed by it, I think you wind up with a net gain, don't you, David?
The problem is as things start to get darker and darker, and that tint and the hue of the color, the hue, it starts to tint darker and darker. We have to have that dialogue on the streets. When you hear a conversation, you can't be afraid and just jump right in there and just make your point. As they say on the streets, shut them down. That's what you got to do, and you're at a perfect time in history to do that.
Well, let me give you a great example, Dave.
Yeah.
Okay. You've heard me talk from time to time about these weirdo right wing interview pitches that I get in my email. I probably get 12 for every liberal interview pitch I get.
Right.
I got one the other day. Guy wants me to have on this cretin from the American Enterprise Institute. Okay, you know, these are the goons that brought you we'll be greeted as liberators, and they'll strew flowers in our path in Iraq.
Right.
I mean, these are the guys that are, they're paid millions of dollars every year to just be butt wrong. So they want me to I get this interview pitch that says our food supply is increasingly fragile. We're finding out poisoned food has come from China. E. coli outbreaks have threatened the national spinach supply, and we're constantly hearing about ground beef that you know, the blah 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 blah, and sickens the thousands of Americans every year. Now, this is all under the rubric of the Food and Drug Administration. Obviously, it's the Food and Drug Administration's fault that these things have happened. So why would we want to add to the Food and Drug Administration's burden by... Wait for it, David. Wait for it. Here it comes. By importing drugs from Canada.
You
see,
know.
It even took the breath out of you for about a second there, didn't it?
No.
And I'm so tempted to get this goober on.
I expect it. I've always expected this kind of reaction, because radical ideas. Here's the problem. And somebody put it succinctly in an interview with Rolling Stone. I forget who said it. I think maybe it was the band Arcade Fire. Anyways, they said the problem with America is that when you give them something that's challenging to think about, they've lost that process, a lot of them, and that's because there's that disconnect in cultures that we seem to have. And I know people say, oh, that's a lot of... It's true. There's a disconnect in cultures because of what they're being fed, of what they're being taught. I mean, it takes a minute. You know, it's like getting a new computer component, and you put it on your computer or something, and all of a sudden it's like, what's this? And it doesn't know exactly what to do with it at first. And it says translating or whatever, and you're doing a little wait time with it, hang time, as they say. And that's what we're experiencing. And I think we need to understand that we need to have more soldiers, as they say, on the line to bring those challenging thoughts. And eventually, what people will be doing will be viral, and people will instantly start lighting up and going, oh, so this is what this is, and then they won't, and then you'll start to see a decline in mass corporation. I think in conglomerates and all of the corporate media. I mean, like I was saying before, hinting at it, this is just a phase. The same thing with the mega music industry. Mm-hmm. It was just a phase. It's gonna fade out. I think Hartman's right about Fox gonna tanking in another. in less than a decade, I think they're going that way, and I don't think anyone's going to be able to bring them back because
Fox's demographic alone, Fox News, that is,
yeah,
their demographic alone ensures their demise.
Oh, it's too polarized. They went to the dark side, if you will, to quote someone famous or infamous, as the case may be, and there's just no way they can come back to it, because we have all the clips. We have all the people. We have all the hate speech. It's all their people. It's all footage after footage. I've never seen. They're going to do documentaries on the broadcasters about 20 years of how prejudiced people are.
Yeah.
And you know, sure. And it's just something to really consider that you're at the tail end of this. So I just wanted to put that out there.
Well, I want to be there when Fox collapses. Because it will. I mean, and what I was talking about their demographic wasn't necessarily the polarization. You know, what is Bill O'Reilly's average listener age? 72?
You know,
and those are the youngsters?
A lot of people aren't catching on to it because they just, you know, it's one of those things.
Yeah, but no, I know what you. I think we will see it fade over time because the American people are sick of this garbage. I mean, I don't know what comment level is like these days at Free Republic, but you know, it's heady salad days are past it too. You know, now that we're finding, and I still haven't found the follow up story to the freaking. In D.C., the freeper, the guy who worked for Free Republic, who was jailed at least until May the 17th, a week ago. I don't know what happened to him, but you know, this is the guy who had 3,000 rounds of ammunition, a whole bunch of guns, Molotov cocktails in his apartment, and went to the immigration rally with a map, and started a fight with a woman.
Mm-hmm.
But you know that their sun is setting too, because part of it is that the rubber mask has been pulled off. The other part, though, David, has to do with us decent people, normal people, standing up and rat smacking these little right wing Nazi wannabes, and sending them back into the dark, muddy places where they live.
I'm in agreement with you, and one last thing I was going to mention is about the Democrats. I was listening to the radio all over, and I was like, it was nonstop. That I can't believe they did this to us. I can't believe I'm going to take a different position. And here's the position, and Hartman pretty much made sense to me in this point of view. He said, "What's going to happen is we're going to have an endless cycle of vetoes over and over and over again." And those people representing those districts, they can't do it because they have some really ill, mentally ill people who just want that appearance that they are for the military. And what does being for the military mean, people? It means having them stay there and give that appearance, the reputation. And when you represent those, when you represent that block of people, that cross-section of people, you can't just go willy-nilly and be like, even if we did four, it would take 12 months or more just to deploy everyone, and they would still be getting killed every day.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, because of this these congressional shenanigans, the people who want to give George Bush his way instead of bringing the troops home are personally responsible for the deaths of about 100 U.S. soldiers a month. Period.
I agree with that, but at the same time, it's like the choice that they're making, this is the choice that they're going with because they believe that, and this is what Hartman...
This is the politics of fear, David.
I know. Hartman was explaining on the radio that he seems to be, you know, he seems to talk to a lot of people off air or whatever. He seems to get a feel of the climate or whatever. And what he feels in Washington is happening to the people he's talking to is that if you just stop and stop, and you give that appearance, it'll be endless. And basically, he was just saying this is what you have to do because it's just going to be nonstop vetoes.
Yeah. Well, that may be what it is. See, that's why I was in favor of not sending George another bill. I mean, that may sound, I don't know, maybe it sounds ridiculous to others,
right,
but it makes perfect sense to me. Okay, we sent you a perfectly good bill. You vetoed it. That's it. That's the bill you got. You vetoed it. You own it. Okay? Own your veto, George. Now, we've got problems to deal with habeas corpus and a dirty attorney general and a thousand other things to do. We don't have time to sit here and play military spending bill chess with you, George. We sent you a bill. Okay, we're not going to send you another bill. If we send you another bill, George, it's going to be the same bill we sent you before that you vetoed. So, you know, you either get off the cross because we need the wood, or, you know, it's going to be on your head what happens.
And that's where a lot of people don't want to deal with the fact that sometimes you have to hand them that kind of a sword of destruction, if you will.
Because, you see, I think, I'm convinced, and this isn't conspiracy theory, and I haven't been reading the National Star or the Global Enquirer or whatever.
Or Prison Planet.
Right. I think George is gone nuts. Okay.
Oh, without a question.
The slurring that I heard the other day, you know, I had an email from someone who said that, you know, he's got that. You know, at this point, you push George a little bit further, and the weasels that are gnawing on his brain are just going to go into overdrive. I mean, this guy has crap going on inside his skull that you and I can't imagine. And if you push him far enough, he will have a public fit. And frankly, at that point, when George Bush has the public fit and melts down in public, then the Bush administration, Dick Cheney, the Congress has no choice whatsoever but to start talking about that constitutional provision that deals with the disability of the chief executive. Make him melt down in public. Make him, David,
make him
own the destruction of the troops that he claims to support.
And that's exactly what Tom was mentioning. And he says a lot of people they'll get really angry and they won't understand. And they won't understand. You can't just, like you said, it's a voting block. I hate to say it, but there's some people out there with your voting block. They're just not going to go with it. A lot of people. And
well, a lot of people are afraid that if we start talking about the war, and that's where the Republicans have remained very, very successful, is equating supporting George Bush's war with supporting the troops. Okay?
Right.
I think you support the troops when you preserve an American military that is competent to defend this country in case of an attack. We could, we can't defend our country from we can't defend a town in Kansas from the ravages of a tornado or the Gulf Coast from the ravages of a hurricane. We're sitting duck for anybody that cares to attack us. And it's not because Bill Clinton decimated the military, it's because George Bush damned well destroyed it.
I think I can put it like this. Unfortunately, we're still trying to fumble with the bullhorn. We're trying to switch it on right now. That's where we're at right now. We got the bullhorn in our hands. We just need to
press the little lever. Just press the little lever.
Just press the red button and.
But this is you know, George Bush used the phrase political theater the other day.
Right.
This is political theater, and it is theater. It is the theater of fear. It is Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer and various and sundry House Democrats and Senate Democrats being absolutely water-boweled, terrified to stand up to this pig-eyed, jug-eared little lout of a piss-poor example of a human being and make him own up and take responsibility for his actions. And they don't have the guts to do it. Sorry, preaching. My bad. Hey, David, I got to roll on, brother. I got a couple of calls to hit, Bob. You take care.
Later.
Thanks for everything.
Bye.
Bye now. Wow, our good buddy Cossack is on the line. Hey, man, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. How about you?
Muddling, but...
I know.
You know how that goes.
Yeah.
I'm just glad that they gave you Agnes back.
Yeah, you know, her not being on the helicopter is such a bonus.
God. You know, these people really, really, really need to get their act together.
I said, it felt like all the oxygen had been sucked out of the room.
Yeah, you start getting dizzy and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the little beads of sweat along the forehead line, and it's like, you, and your whole life just turns into what the, you know?
And then they wonder, oh, I'm sorry, that was somebody else. Thank you.
Yeah, idiot. My bad.
Idiot.
Yeah, and you know, the first inclination is to reach through the phone and just strangle the little son of a gun. But you can't do that, and it wasn't malpractice, and you can't sue, and it wouldn't. But my God, what about the people that they don't catch? What about the people that they do put on the helicopter? I'm sorry, I think that way, Cossack. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, that's doctors leave a very bad taste in my mouth. It was because of their incompetence that my mother died.
You and I share that in common.
Oh, yeah. She went into the hospital overnight to get some tests on her ulcer, and mm-hmm. she caught the hospital pneumonia and died.
It's a slightly different story with my mom, but it's the end result is the same, and you don't know I don't know how to talk about it, and the anger that you're left with, and not even so much as a, you know, oops, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, she came in there basically a healthy woman, except she had a bleeding ulcer, which she has had for years, and then she ends up dead.
Yeah, with my mom, it was the spleen. And they killed her, but in the case of my mother, it was they let her die and gave us this lecture about it's time for us to stop playing God. Only after 7 months after her $1 million Medicare limit had been reached.
Exactly. God.
Vibrant, sure. 72 years old, vibrant, full of life, absolutely in love with her grandchildren. You know, who were just babies at the time. Our youngest had just been born, and they killed her.
Yeah.
And the state of Alabama has a 1-year statute of limitations, and I was told by one of the best medical malpractice lawyers down there, too bad. You know, because I was gonna have an abusive lawsuit. Oh, God, I hate him, Cossack.
Well, and the problem of it is all these jackass conservatives or Republicans or whatever you want to call them, who keep on talking about lawsuit abuse. How is it abusive? They say, well, these people get these huge awards. Listen, I worked for plaintiff lawyers. I have seen cases where you have a person in their mid-20s who has been permanently ruined. They're going to need daily medical care for the rest of their lives. They will not be able to work for the rest of their lives, and they get $1 million award. Oh, well, that's too much. Do you know how much it costs, folks? You know?
Yeah.
This is not a joke. This is not. They didn't win the lottery here.
Well, for instance, in the state of West Virginia, we have $1 million cap on medical malpractice awards. Now, you take that 20-year-old you just mentioned who's going to need round-the-clock, full-time care for the rest of his or her life.
Mm-hmm.
$1 million is a drop in the bucket.
Correct. It goes away very quickly.
I mean, it won't provide lifetime care in a skilled nursing facility.
No.
It will not compensate the family members who have to quit jobs, give up their own coverage. No, not at all. And the thing is, because it's been made so difficult, cases that used to be open and shut aren't even prosecutable anymore.
Correct. Go ahead.
No, you please.
I mean, I've seen cases where it was blatantly obvious, where, you know, industrial accident, where a piece of machinery literally blew up and burned the person to death. Because it was being run improperly, because it works faster that way. And they wouldn't let it go to court. No, no, don't have a case here. What?
Yeah. Right. Well, like I mentioned, the case that was filed a month or so ago by the family of the preacher in Raleigh County. That's astonishing to me. And the percentages, you know, thousands of Americans every year undergo surgery and they screw up the anesthesia and the person remains awake while they carve on his body.
And
yet they've got a medical malpractice insurance company that says we don't care if he signed a confession. We're going to make you try the case all the way to the end. We're going to make it as expensive as possible for you, and then if you win, we're going to appeal as far as we can appeal it.
Yep.
Because they do it. It's actually cheaper to pay the verdict. They're doing this because they're just bad faith operations. Bad faith is how they run their business.
Exactly.
And, of course, we've had that taken away from us in this state, too. Being able to sue the bastards in bad faith. Yeah. It's a nightmarish situation. It is.
I mean, when I had to go in and have most of my large intestine removed, the day after, literally, the next day, the morphine pump seized. And I'm sitting here, I'm shrieking, for God's sake. You have no idea how wonderful it feels when you're opened up from just below your breastbone down to your pubic bone, and you're still bleeding through the stitches.
Ugh. I don't even want to contemplate it.
I mean, I'm screaming at these people, please, just give me a shot of morphine, then fix your stupid pump. This went on for hours. I was begging just to, you know, just pull the plug, for God's sake. Kill me.
Oh, I know. I remember the doctor's appointment that we had with my father and his general practitioner down in Alabama. And I said, look, he's 82 years old. Or 81. He's 81 years old. He has a pain problem. It makes it difficult for him to walk. We would like for him to be able to be active so that ultimately what happened to him wouldn't happen to him. And I said, you know, can you give him anything? I said, I frankly don't care if it's codeine, if it's morphine, if it's OxyContin. And he looks at me and says, well, if you want that from me, you'll just have to get another doctor because I'm not going to give your father an addiction. And I just wanted to punch the bastard on the spot because 81 years old, suffering real, verifiable pain, and he's concerned with my 81-year-old father's addiction problem?
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, my dad wasn't some toothless meth addict from up the holler. He got so smug about it. God, it was...
The thing is, when you're in actual pain, trust me, you're not getting off on the narcotic.
No, if you're in actual pain, the narcotic effect is almost negligible.
Exactly.
It's not like it's fun.
No, it just makes pain be over there a little bit, instead of being the be-all and end-all of your existence.
I know.
That is not getting high. All you're doing is, oh, God, thank you.
Look, it's almost like a normal life now. Yeah, exactly. But no, Jesus needs you to enjoy that pain. You know, that's like the lawsuits filed by the Justice Department. And, you know, all this stuff comes into question now, doesn't it, Cossack? The Justice Department, all these suits against doctors and states for medical marijuana, all of that comes into question now. They were tormenting sick people.
Yeah, well, not only that, what they're doing, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but the DEA has been running around busting pain clinics for prescribing painkillers.
Sure. Sure, and that's what I'm saying. It's all subject to question now because we know Monica Goodling admitted today under oath that she had actively used religious and political criteria in her hiring practices. They deliberately stuffed the Justice Department with people who think that Jesus wants you to suffer pain like he did on the cross.
Exactly. I mean, she admitted a felony, for God's sake, in Congress. Oh, yes, we were using paging lists. Whoa, wait a minute.
I loves me some immunity.
Do you know what this means? You're admitting to the Department of Justice committing felonies.
Mm-hmm.
For God's sake.
Oh yeah, but she also did what she thought was a good job of insulating it all from Fredo.
Well, she threw him to under the bus.
Well, I think she did too, but I don't think she was trying to.
No, but she did. I mean, it was ridiculous. And she started out by saying, I plead the Fifth Amendment, and Conyers goes, oh, no, you don't. You didn't say that.
Right. Exactly.
It was
something to behold. It truly was, these hearings. This hearing. Yeah.
And you heard, what was his name? Stephen King from Texas.
Yeah.
Drawing an equivalence between Regent Law School and Harvard Law. Excuse me?
Pardon me, I'll be running screaming from the room now. Yeah. I thought Mike Pence from Indiana, I thought he was going to go across the table and lick her on the face or something. I mean, he was getting that Hannibal Lecter look about him when he was good. You know, I just don't know why we're having this hearing. I just don't know. Golly, you're pretty. Sure do got a pretty mouth. I expected banjos at any minute.
Exactly.
You know, the fawning was just disgusting.
It got so much better when Davis got a hold of her and started doing the pit bull rendition on her. And she was just getting more and more and more and more flustered.
Linda Sanchez was good. Arthur Davis was brilliant. Was it Keith Ellison from Minnesota that got after her a little bit, too?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I will not have my time shortened by this crap.
Yeah.
Give me an answer.
You go, freshman congressman. You go. So
Muslims in Congress.
Yeah, little bright snippets of hope to balance off against the general war, the gutlessness with regard to the war resolution or the war funding resolution, which is an entirely separate topic. Cossack, it's so good to hear from you, brother. I hope we will again soon. We've got to roll on and do the news. But, you know, any time, man.
Will do. Take care.
All right. Thanks. Bye now.
Alrighty. Bye-bye.
Calling from Florida, our good buddy, the Cossack. We're going to come back to your phone calls after the news. And I'll tell you what. Let's, just by way of introduction, you heard the word caging list. I've got a few seconds here. I want to run a little bit of Marsha Goodling. See what I've done to myself? Monica Goodling audio. This business on caging lists. Hit it, Agnes.
Okay. And the last thing was the voter, the caging issue, which was a reference to Tim Griffin.
Can you explain what caging is? You know, familiar with that term?
My understanding, and I don't actually know a lot about it, is that it's a direct mail term that people who do direct mail, when they separate addresses that may be good versus addresses that may be bad, that's about the best information that I have. It's a direct mail term that's used by vendors in that circumstance.
Are you a good address or a bad address? It's just a direct mail term. That's what it is. It's a direct mail term. It's how they sort out the good addresses from the bad addresses.
Oh my God. I mean, you know what caging lists are. And you know what? I think all of you, if you start screaming loudly enough, it'll probably come the other way through the internet's pipelines. The series of tubes, and we'll hear it here, because I heard that earlier this afternoon, and I don't know, when we build the highfalutin fancy studio, I get one of those old-fashioned elementary school dark green metal garbage cans to just kick once in a while, and have it bounce all over the walls, because that was a garbage can kicking moment.
Yeah, that caging list, you mean the ones where we kept 94,000 of the colored people from voting and they were all Democrats? That's just the direct mail term. That's all that is.
God. But we'll talk about it some more in the next hour. And we'll come to your phone calls right out of the news. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. Iraqi police say the body of a man they pulled from the Euphrates River this morning was one of three kidnapped U.S. soldiers. U.S. military officials have not yet identified the man. The Associated Press reports that a U.S. official who wishes to remain anonymous says a second body was found nearby. Troops, meanwhile, are continuing to comb the area south of Baghdad for their missing comrades. President Bush says Osama bin Laden is setting up terrorist cells in Iraq with the intention of carrying out attacks on American soil. Speaking at a U.S. Coast Guard commencement, the president said 9/11 was just a down payment on violence yet to come. Critics say the president is selectively revealing sensitive intelligence to justify the Iraq war. 9 U.S. Navy warships, including 2 aircraft carriers, arrived today off the coast of Iran. 17,000 U.S. sailors and Marines will conduct exercises to demonstrate the U.S.'s commitment to security in the Persian Gulf. The Pentagon appears to be preparing to double the number of U.S. combat forces in Iraq this year. Duty tours of troops already in Iraq will also be extended. The latest war funding bill is now in Congress, and it does not contain a timetable for troop withdrawal. The measure, which is expected to pass, will provide over $100 billion of war funding and another $17 billion for domestic and military-related spending not requested by the president. A U.S. House committee is demanding the Bush administration account for billions of missing dollars allocated for Iraq reconstruction projects. The Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction says approximately $5 billion a year is lost due to corruption. Many of the panel's members blame the Iraqi government for the losses. Lawmakers voted 74-24 in favor of cutting the number of foreign workers allowed into the U.S. under the new immigration bill. The Senate voted to cut that number from 400,000 to 200,000 a year. Washington lawmakers narrowly approved a bill to impose strict penalties for price gouging at the pump. The bill calls for fines of up to $150 million for corporations and $2 million for individuals. The White House calls the measure a form of price control. You're listening to the Quality News Network, science and business news, next.
If you're a news junkie, there's a book you must read called Don't Mess with the Press, How to Write, Report, and Produce Quality Television News. Don't Mess with the Press is a textbook for journalism students and a handbook for people already in the business. While written primarily as an instructional guide, Don't Mess with the Press is also useful for people who follow the news closely, who want to understand how news decisions are made by quality reporters to ensure they get the best news coverage possible. Don't Mess with the Press was written by Tony Seaton, founder and executive producer of the Quality News Network. Tony began his broadcast journalism career in his teens, eventually covering Watergate, 6 elections, 5 space shots, and a wide range of general news. He also produced Barbara Walters' news interviews for ABC. Ordering information for Don't Mess with the Press can be found at qualitynewsnetwork.com. Visit our website and click on the Don't Mess with the Press link.
Researchers say climate change could cause indigenous plant species to become extinct. The uncultivated relatives of farmed plants like the potato and the peanut could be threatened because of drought. And California is the latest state to detect an insect-borne virus that kills tomato plants. Tomato crops in Florida, Georgia, and across Central America have been decimated by the disease. California produces 95% of the nation's processed tomatoes. A study of rainfall in the U.S. shows Mobile, Alabama is the wettest community in the nation. It receives more than 5 feet of rain annually. Stocks ended lower today after an afternoon sell-off. Financial analysts say the sell-off was sparked by former Fed Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan's comments that he feared a dramatic contraction in the Chinese stock market. Google has acquired a stake in biotech company 23andMe for nearly $4 million. The firm provides customers with information about their genetic makeup. Light sweet crude is trading at $65.77 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. The Dow closed down 14 points at 13,525. The Nasdaq is down 11. And the S&P closed down 2 at 1522. There's more at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Right here. I've changed chairs. I'm driving the bus here for a little bit. Agnes was called away by Liza. Liza, being a little more than a month old, has some needs that need to be met, shall we say. And so Agnes will be back presently. Listen, a couple of program notes for you. First of all, our pals Clyde and Wally and Dookie over at WD40.com. D-U-B-Y-A-D 4-0, the numeral 4, the numeral 0, WD40.com, have been nominated in the Blogger's Choice Awards. Do them a favor. Go over and vote for them. They need some votes. Okay, they need a lot of votes. But it's one of our absolute favorite websites. I hope it's yours, too. And there's a button you click for the Blogger's Choice Award in the upper left-hand corner of the page. Go and vote. And secondly, make sure that you are listening tomorrow evening at 5 Eastern Time, 4 Central, 2 Pacific. Have I got it all? Okay. The Radio Inside Scoop with our good friend Mark Levine. He's going to have a very special guest on, former FBI agent, insider, who discovered evidence of complicity between homegrown American white supremacist groups and Muslim terrorists. Reported it to the FBI, and what happened to it? You know what happened to it under the Bush administration, because, after all, white supremacists, some people call them homegrown terrorists. George Bush calls them his base. That's right. They covered it up. So join Mark Levine tomorrow afternoon, 5 Central, or 5 Eastern, 4 Central, 2 Pacific, for what I think will most likely be a very, very, very scintillating and frankly, hair-raising discussion. Okay? Now, enough of that. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend Benedict is at large, and he's at large on our on the telephone system. Benedict, thank you so much for waiting. Good to talk to you.
How you doing, Bob?
I'm getting along. How about you?
Not too bad. Now you started out tonight talking about the medical travails and everything, and I could talk to you for hours on that. My first 10 years in business were working for the largest group insurer in a management capacity in the world.
Oh, wow.
I know it from the inside, and now as a person without medical insurance, I can tell it to you from the outside. I could fix the problem in 2 minutes if somebody would hire me.
Or if somebody wanted the problem fixed.
Well, yeah.
There's that, too, you know.
That is the problem. Nobody wants it fixed. But that's not why I called you.
Okay.
Okay, I called you about the Goodling hearing today.
Yes.
Because I glued myself. I had my little Real Player screen up in the corner of my monitor and, you know, announcing to two chat rooms, you know, play-by-play and everything.
Yeah.
And everything. And I just wanted to kind of run that down for you because I'm sure you spent a lot of time not quite so much near the TV today.
Yeah, I got to watch some of it, but not all of it. So tell me, Benedict, was this, did you find yourself wanting to scream from time to time?
Not really. Now, let me set this up. I tune in real early, okay, because I want to get on the stream early, and
yeah.
I know that the stream is going to be packed and everything, so I want to get it hooked up early and everything, and I tune into this C-SPAN 3 program called Washington Journal.
Sure.
Okay. Now, a nice enough program. It's like the first time I've seen it, but it seems like, you know, they get some Washington newsmaker and put them on for an hour and interview them and take a few phone calls and stuff like that. So they have this guy named
Arthur Davis.
Yeah. Representative from Alabama, Democrat.
Yeah, he represents a district that basically runs from Tuscaloosa to Birmingham.
Montgomery is his hometown. Okay, so here's this guy up there, and he's a black guy, which you might expect. And, I mean, his clothes are to the max. I mean, he is like, wow, you know, good looking. He's got a King's English, except a little Southern drawl.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, went to Harvard Law School. And was an assistant prosecutor for the prosecutor's office. So I was saying, okay, this is worth listening to. So, you know, instead of just, you know, going and chatting, I'm listening to the guy. And he made a couple of really good points. His first one, he said, in Congress, we tend to get into this thing about legal versus illegal. You know, we try to draw that point of breaking the law. He says, but we're talking about the Attorney General here. What are we talking about that very low standard? Why aren't we talking about the greater standard that we should hold an Attorney General to?
Okay.
And I said, yeah, that makes sense. You know, that's a good point. And later on, he gets into the cloud over Gonzalez. And here's the way he describes it. He says, look, the guy came out, he testified, I had to recluse myself from discussions of this with my coworkers. And he's saying, look, this is the biggest problem facing the AG office. And if the AG cannot address it, then he can't do the job he's supposed to do. And I'm saying, yeah, that makes sense. So anyways, you know, I mean, you know, good entertainment, good warm-up for the hearings. So I get to the hearings. And, you know, it starts out with all the fluff and everything. And by the way, I think Monica did a fantastic job. I mean, she was a little fish in a real big pond, and I think she conducted herself very, very well. Okay, I was very impressed with her. You know, I had, you know, the typical liberal, you know, I hate you type of stuff with just the press reports. But she did a good job. So I'm thinking to myself, because I watched.
She was trying to drop a couple of dimes along the way, Goodling was.
Yeah, she did. Yeah, she did. You know, and you know, I mean, but she came across as very honest and sincere. That's what I felt about her. She was really trying to do the best she could. And like I said, she was a little fish, and this was a real big pond for her. I mean, no pond she had ever swum in before.
Really, really, Benedict? Because I didn't get so much of that from her.
I felt it.
I got this intense sense of her having been prepped.
Yeah, of course she was. She had a lawyer and everything. I mean,
and the legal cases,
I'm prepped.
Yeah,
when I go in legal cases, of course.
The clip that I played with her dismissal of caging lists.
I didn't find that all that bad. She didn't seem to have an understanding of it. I mean, you and I know what it is, but I mean, I'm thinking, well, she's on the other side, so yeah, it's possible she really doesn't have a grip on it. I mean, we know it because it's a big issue to us. But would she, on her side, have been presented with that? Probably not, because that's how they are.
But Benedict, we know that the White House was actively involved with the caging list.
Yes, they were.
But that doesn't mean she was. And see, she also said that she never had any conversations with Harriet Myers or Karl Rove. And when in these kind of circumstances, I pay close attention to language, as I'm sure you do as well. I never had a conversation is not the same as I never participated in any communication.
And she honestly came out, and that came out also. Yeah, there was no private conversation.
That doesn't exclude the emails, Benedict. That's what I'm getting at. And you know, Greg Palast is sitting on 500 emails.
She was very much, you know, I don't recall the emails so much. And I mean, you have to figure it. I mean,
but wasn't it?
What does her email box look like? You know, how many? You know, and
I don't know. I'm guessing she doesn't get the Nigerian emails that I got. You know, I mean.
I get your discomfort with it, but she seemed genuine with it.
I guess I'm so jaded that none of these people seem genuine to me anymore.
I was trying not to be. Now here's the thing. I watched the last Gonzalez hearing, okay, and I waited, and it was kind of entertaining and everything from our sense. You know what I'm talking about, and. I'm waiting and waiting, and after that lunch break, all of a sudden, here comes the pit bull. I think it was Wexler.
Robert Wexler. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he was the pit bull who just tore Gonzalez a new butt. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm watching this, and I'm saying, okay, I know I'm not supposed to expect anything until after the lunch break, because you have to know that they rigged this. Whose assignment is to do what?
Yeah.
You know, and both sides do it. Okay, I mean, the Republican side was pathetic today. You have apologies, and you're wonderful, and you're beautiful, and there's no law breaking. And it was always the same points, and they were so stupid because they missed the essential point of
Mike
everything
Pence,
that was going on.
Mike Pence made me want to put my foot through the television.
Oh, the one, I forget, was he the one who went off on Murtha? In the morning?
No, I don't think so. This was right before the lunch break.
No. This was earlier in the morning. One of them went off and just about got himself called. They're like, what the hell are you talking about?
This was Mike Pence. He's got perfect silver hair. He's from Indiana.
I think this was the Utah guy.
Okay, but this is but Pence. Pence, what drove me crazy about what he said, Benedict, was when he got and he had this smarmy, whiny tone of voice that he was using.
They all did it exactly the same.
Yeah. But he said, "Yeah, I fear that we are approaching the point where we are going to criminalize politics."
Yeah.
We're going to criminalize politics.
Three points over and over with every single Republican. It was the same 3 points over and over, phrased differently. Phrased with different accents, different strenuousness on the individual points, but it was the same three things. I actually got out a bag of popcorn to watch this thing, and I felt like I wanted to throw the popcorn up after a couple of them.
It was noxious. Arthur Davis, I thought, did a brilliant job.
I'm sitting there saying, I know I've got to wait now. I forget who the Democratic woman was. She was pretty good in the morning, but it was still soft. And I said, I know I have to wait till the afternoon to find who the pit bull is. Now, who's the pit bull? But Arthur Davis. Okay, who? And do you think this was a coincidence? was on Washington Journal for an hour interview beforehand, showing how articulate he was for C-SPAN fans and everything. He was put there deliberately. He had to be. He was the plant there. He was the pit bull. I didn't know who it was, but all of a sudden he came up and he walked her down the primrose path. I mean, he didn't go inch by inch. He went
well, it was a
quarter
cross,
inch by a quarter inch.
It was a cross-examination, Benedict. It was a cross-examination. It was masterly.
Assistant prosecutor.
Yeah, this guy. He was having
walked
his
her
courtroom
down the primrose path, and she couldn't say no. She wanted to, and you know, and I looked at her as being very honest. I mean, I can't really say that because I wasn't actually there, or and that kind of stuff, which was true, and everything. But she couldn't say no to anything that he put up, as he just moved her quarter inch by quarter inch, quarter inch by quarter inch down, saying Gonzalez is dead. And he was brilliant. Now, I don't know if you saw the last half hour, because they went, you were probably doing show prep or something. They went off to...
Yeah, I didn't catch the very end of it.
They went off to do houseboats. And they came back and they said, okay, last half hour, Republicans get half hour, I get it, 15 minutes, we get 15 minutes. And they gave Davis the last five again. And I loved it how Davis ran out of time, and it was like the next three or four Democrats came up and ceded the time for him to keep going. So he was obviously the pit bull.
Yeah.
And he did. He was amazing. He was amazing. And he closed out. He closed out really well.
You know, but as mentioned previously, I thought Keith Ellison, who is a freshman, acquitted himself quite well. Because, you know, he was subjected to such vilification because of the whole, you know, taking the oath on the Koran thing.
Yeah.
You know, for him to just step out there and be tough about it and ask hard questions, I thought it made it gave him real credibility.
Well, we know that these guys have had 6 years to learn to be tough.
Yeah.
Because every time they open their mouth, you know, somebody's slamming a bat into it.
Right, without a doubt. But what do you think the final upshot is in this? What's the next move in this
upshot.
Chess game?
I'm glad you asked that, because I do have an absolute opinion on that. I think Monica's testimony was absolutely wonderful. Wonderful. Because she came off as very sincere. In fact, the people who questioned her on our side, I think, were, you know, giving her the space to move. I mean, perhaps with the exception of Davis, but even he was respectful with her. And the Republican pandering was just so soapy and so unnecessary. She was doing fine enough. I mean, she wasn't going down the tubes or anything like that. I mean, personally, you know, she didn't need what they did for her. But because of that, she comes up and she says, you know, I don't know, which came out very early under Conyers' questioning, because he's got his one question, who did it? And she didn't know. And I believed her. And I said, that's good, because that puts her out of the loop also. So that puts her out of the loop. Gonzo, I actually believe, is actually out of the loop, and intentionally. And where else does the loop go? It goes straight to the White House. Monica filled in the squares. I didn't do it. My boss didn't do it. So it has to be the White House that did it.
Well,
have to go to next.
As the folks over at Think Progress are noting, Benedict, in their little headline, Goodling hints attorney firings came from White House Judicial Selection Committee.
Yeah. I mean, she was kind of cornered into that and everything. And but that's why I have a lot of respect for her, because, you know, when she was cornered, she didn't do this Gonzalez flub. I mean, she might stop for, you know, 10, 15 seconds and think, and you know, answer and everything. But, I mean, this is, like I said, this is a small fish in a big pond. I mean, these are very important answers she's giving, and she wants to give them right. You know,
and she's got immunity.
And she's got immunity, so she can give them right. And she wants to be very careful because the immunity doesn't extend to her if she lies. You know, if she lies there,
yeah,
the immunity does not cover that. That's very explicit. So
yeah, because it's conditioned upon truthful testimony.
Yes, yes. So I mean, I was pretty happy with the whole thing. I think it moved it squarely into subpoenaing the White House.
I think it certainly gives them grounds, and if that's the upshot, I hope that's what happens.
Yeah.
I'm not.
Well, Congress,
you and I may agree to disagree a little bit, Benedict. I was not as impressed with her. I frankly thought she was trying to play. I mean, I've been saying Marsha Brady all evening. I really think she was trying to play that card because she.
I tend not to think that because I'm looking at her, and. I mean, did you see the cameras around her in the beginning and everything?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, she was petrified. She was petrified. She's a small fish. She's absolutely a small fish in a way bigger pond than she ever thought she was playing in.
See, I tend to think she was petrified because she knew she was stone cold busted.
Well, yeah, that too, but she did have the immunity for that. And she had her lawyer right in back of her, so she was well advised. That she had that and everything. And it was funny when they started it out and Conyers asked her the first question and she said, Fifth Amendment. And I went, what? And then I learned it was a procedural thing.
Yeah, it was.
He had to ask her a question so that she could claim the Fifth Amendment and then he would say, you've got immunity. And that was just procedural.
Yeah, it was part of the wrestling match.
But it was procedure. They had to go through that little question.
Yeah, she had to have the immunity formally conferred upon her.
Yeah, she did. She did. You know, so, I mean, I to me, small fish, I mean...
Well, I've got her opening statement here handy. I'll play it in a little bit, I hope, Benedict, and...
her opening statement wasn't bad.
It was wholly and shamelessly self-serving.
But I mean, her ass is on the line. Wouldn't yours be? Mine would be.
Well, I can't say for sure because these are Bush functionaries, Benedict. I don't expect them to be anything approaching reasonable or honest or decent or truthful.
I know, but
ever.
She just struck me as a true believer, an idealist. You know, and just not a clue of the dark side.
You know, that's where you and I differ a little bit, because I think that she's been at work for the dark side, itself away in certain turns of phrase, certain pieces of phraseology. She, for instance, had to turn her fundamentalist fanaticism. And, you know, she couldn't talk about having a religion or having or belonging to a denomination. She had to talk about and did you catch this phrase? It was just sickening.
I gave that Agnes.
She called it a faith system.
Yeah, I gave that Agnes a link to a book called The Authoritarian. Did she give that to you?
I don't have it at hand, but...
John Dean's book, Conservatives Without Conscience?
Oh, yeah, I read it.
And he talks about the guy who did the sociological research?
Yeah.
Well, his full book is available online.
Okay.
And I read it over the weekend. And it's amazing. And it really puts things...
And she is probably one of these authoritarian followers who has to have sort of authority figure.
Right.
But that's
what I got out of it.
But when you start hauling out the Orwell language, and that's what faith system is, there's no, it's not a faith system.
They believe it is, though. That's the thing you get at Altwell. Bob Altwell wrote The Authoritarians. He presented it. They do believe it, and they compartmentalize all these conflicting truths. They never let them touch each other, so that they never see that everything is a lie. And I mean, the whole book, about two-thirds of the book, maybe two-thirds, three-quarters of the book, is about the authoritarian followers, as opposed to the, what he calls the double highs, the leaders,
yeah.
And everything. And they're very, very different people and everything. And this is like, you know, over two decades of research the guy has done and everything. And she fits marvelously into authoritarian follower. You know, a true believer who just separates anything that they could put together that would give the lie to what they believe in.
Yeah, I saw Steve Cohen, freshman congressman from Tennessee, asking her questions about, you know, because she put this smarmy garbage out there about why she chose to go to the Draw Spunky School of Law or whatever. And he was asking...
Oh, you're cynical, Bob. You're too cynical. Too cynical.
It's a terrible law school.
Yeah, it's 134 out of 134.
Yeah, I mean, it's just awful. You know, Cohen pointed out that over 60% of her classmates failed the bar.
It's awful, but it's certified. Now, did somebody pull some tricks to get it certified? I don't know, perhaps. You know, but it's still a law school, and I don't care. It's not easy to get through law school, even if it's a lousy law school.
I don't brag, and I certainly didn't graduate summa cum laude or anything. I got through 3 years of law school and never opened a book. Okay?
Well...
It's not...
Pardon your genius, Bob.
No, it's not that difficult. We've been poisoned by things like...
You catch on to the fundamental ideas naturally, because I'm very much into law, and I tend to catch on to fundamental ideas in it. If you catch on to them, it's not that hard. But most people don't. Most people have a very hard time catching on to fundamental ideas of law. It's not intuitive to most people. It perhaps is to you. It seems to be to me... And I consider that a blessing for me. And
well, the biggest thing about getting through law school, once you started studying the concepts, Benedict, is to figure out what is the most rotten, miserable outcome imaginable, and bang, that's what the law will find. Because that's the way it operates. Because the law is always a generation or so behind human society.
Oh well, you see, now I get into philosophy of law where they start talking about natural law versus civil
oh
law,
god, yeah,
and all that stuff. And so I balance that out. In,
oh, if you want to make your, if
broader perspective,
Benedict, if you want to really make your head hurt sometime, look up the rule against perpetuities and chew on that one for a while. That's good for a weekend or so.
Okay, I'll do that.
So good hearing from you, my friend.
Okay, great talking with
take
you.
Take care now.
Okay,
bye.
Take care.
And let's see, let's roll on here. Peter joins us from Florida. Hey, Peter, welcome to the program.
Greetings, Bob.
And hallucinations.
Thank you. There are three things I wanted to tell you about tonight.
Tell me all of them.
Well, one of them I'll talk about briefly. We talked about a little bit in the chat room, and that's that Mary Cheney gave birth to her baby boy today. And the White House apparently released a photograph of Lynn Cheney and the vice president and the baby boy of his sixth grandchild.
Right.
And, of course, there was no photograph of her lesbian partner. But
no.
Those three. But, boy, you'd be hard-pressed to find that photograph. I've been looking for about 20, 30 minutes. I can't find it anywhere.
I'm looking at it.
Oh, you found it?
It's
those three? Is that correct?
Yeah, it's and Dick is not touching the baby.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I mean, you know, they little newborn skin is like very, very sensitive and stuff. It would probably burn through to the bone if Dick touched it.
Well, one good thing about being Lynn Cheney's baby, and that is that little boy will never be asked to in this endless war in Iraq. He will never be asked to go over there and lay down his life for political economic
nope.
domination.
If there ever comes a draft, he won't be drafted.
He will not.
And he is. See, now I got. I am literally only inches away from little Liza right now.
Bless her heart.
Oh,
I could hear her coo on the phone when I was on with her.
Oh, she's over here and she's kind of playing and grabbing and, you know, and she's just discovered that she has a tongue, so she's going la 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 and, you know, sticking it out and stuff. But see, there's a big difference between little Liza here and baby Dick. Okay? or what is the baby's name?
Samuel David something.
Yeah, okay.
Chaney. Yeah, Chaney's his last name.
Yeah.
As if we needed another Chaney.
Right. Little Sammy and little Liza have some things that really do separate them in this world. Little Liza was born owing $40,000 to the federal government.
Yeah. Buster Little Bart.
Little Sam was born expecting millions from the government, because as long as Halliburton gets government contracts, little Sam is he's in the will.
Isn't that the truth? And they will have a fancy lawyer, I tell you what, to come up with every possible contract that will simulate marriage so that they can...
Yeah, little Sam, and see, this is the other thing. This is Mary Cheney's baby, okay?
Yeah.
The other mother...
Last name is Poe, I don't remember.
Right. Her last name is Poe. Under the law of Virginia, where the baby was born... Heather Poe has no legal relationship whatsoever with Samuel David Cheney.
Or even probably Mary Cheney, I would venture to say.
No legal relationship with Mary Cheney. So when the time comes that they want little Samuel David to forget about what his parentage was, they can just disappear him, and Heather Poe has no legal recourse whatsoever to even try to find him, Peter.
Oh boy, can't they though?
This Cheney baby is going to have every advantage that a baby could have.
Oh yeah.
Meanwhile, little Liza here is going to have to struggle for the ordinary things in life.
Uh huh. And she's going to have to pay that $40,000 to Samuel.
Yeah. Yeah, right. She owes the 40 large to Samuel.
Sure does. Yep.
And I sit here and I'm just, every instant that I look at Liza, I fall a little bit more in love. She's just beautiful.
I'm hearing her on the phone, bitch.
She's making these happy little noises. Every now and then she gives you one of these little smiles. She looks like she kind of wants to reach out. Yeah, there was one of them.
Do you hear what your papa's doing? He's telling people you owe $40 million.
$40,000.
See what you all do? Yeah.
But the thing is, it doesn't matter how much I love her. It doesn't matter at all. What matters is that we've created a culture here that affords some newborns more equality than other newborns.
Yeah.
And God forbid that little Samuel David Cheney turns out to be gay.
Well, God forbid. They'll put him in one of the over 100 recovery centers, the turnabout.
Yeah, and he'll be consigned to spending his afternoons going to the mall to look at the hot guys. Did you run into that story?
No, I missed that.
One of the ex-gays?
Yeah.
Spent $40,000 trying to get over the fact that he liked other guys. Talked about how all the ex-gays in the ex-gay programs would sort of have to surreptitiously sneak off to the mall to boy watch.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that just pathetic, Peter?
I've read some of the horror stories. That one I missed. The one I read, they're not allowed to talk to each other for the first three or four days, and they have to confess all of their fantasies. And basically what they try to pull is aversion therapy. They want you to wear a rubber band on your wrist and snap it any time you're trying.
No.
Oh, yeah. And it goes on and on.
I want to listen to Liza Minnelli. Crack. Oh, Barbara Streisand. Crack. Oh.
A tennis racket and bang it on your bed and scream, out! Get out! Damn spirit of homosexuality!
Get out of my bedroom, Oscar Wilde. Get out!
I have this vision of Mommy Dearest in the dirt.
I was going to bring you a toy, but your mama said you'd like some nice raw liver.
The other story I want to tell you about was, guess what, a Liberty student, a Liberty Falwell's...
Oh, yes, it is prayer meeting, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, he was arrested because he was going to go to the funeral with bombs. Yes, they found, I think it was 5 bombs in the trunk of his car. Apparently his mother tipped him off. She was freaking out about it. And they were like some sort of a napalm-like thing. I guess it was gasoline and goop, who knows what. But
yeah.
The deal is the sheriff's department is saying that Falwell and the people at the funeral were attending the funeral were not in danger. What his target was Fred Phelps. And this is just so funny to me because this is the standard right-wing Christian solution. If you don't agree with them, you just kill them.
Yep, just kill them. Just kill them. God, kill them in the name of God.
And to top it all off, he was his field of study at Liberty University, he was going to be an Army chaplain.
Yes, he was. And there's more. He had a MySpace page.
Did he really?
He really, really did. Are you familiar with the great gay blog Pam's House Blend?
Yes, yes, yes. I've seen it, but only once. I've just recently discovered it.
Okay. Before the computer crashed the first time this evening.
Yes.
I had his MySpace page up. And you can link to there's a link to the MySpace page at Pam's House Blend.
I see. Stop by.
Oh, his list of his favorite movies is enough to send you screaming from the room.
A Passion of the Christ.
Absolutely.
I know, certainly not
Harry Potter. No.
Not the Da Vinci Code.
No. Where did I find this thing? Oh, daggummit. Did I leave it up over there, Agnes? Probably not. The Passion of the Christ, I think, was number 8.
Oh, I see.
But the others were, you know, things like, Barney, the Grand Adventure, you know, just really insane, dichotomous stuff.
You mean like Barney the Dinosaur?
Oh, it might not have been Barney, but it was something equally inane.
Barney has the resurrection egg in that, Bob. It's a good one.
No, stop it, Agnes. Oh, where...
Barney and Tinky Winky are doing.
Oh, please. No, not with the purple purse.
And the other thing I want to tell you about is,
yes,
guess who has written a book?
I, at this point, I'm terrified to ask.
Mike Jones. Mike Jones has written the tell-all book. Mike Jones is the male escort who was...
massage artist.
Yeah, the book is a tell-all. The book is called I Had to Say Something, is the name of the book. And it's a tell-all book about the 3-year relationship he had for money with Ted Haggard. And he goes into great detail, explaining, like, in the beginning how guilty Haggard was in the beginning and how he would have these guilt-filled, teary orgasms.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes, honey. And then it discusses, as time goes by, that Haggard became more, verbal with him and communicative, and, there's talk, dirty talking and all that kind of stuff. But the thing is that he began, asking about crystal meth, and Jones takes great pains to explain in the book that he's not a meth dealer. But one day Haggard shows up with, the powder and the little blasphene envelope sort of thing. And so Jones, shows him how to, chop it up and, shows him, simulates how to snort it. He says he didn't do any. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. He didn't inhale.
Yeah, whatever. And so anyway, after that point in time, Haggard, really began to explore. He began buying sex toys. And he had a little a black canvas bag that he would bring with him to the appointment. And
oh,
am I telling you way more than you wanted to?
my third eye inside my head is hurting.
I'm sorry, but it's Haggard. It's so well deserved.
Oh, absolutely.
This was the guy.
I've got the movie list when you're ready. By the way,
he was the one in Jesus Camp going on about the homosexuals and all that sort of thing. He was the
he was doing latex based research.
Yeah, and so every time he would come, he would pull out some new sex toy out of the canvas bag and show it to Mike Jones and talk with Mike about how to use it.
They're really kind of self-explanatory and don't need instructions.
You would think. You would think it was as complicated as
that. But see, he enjoyed hearing about it.
Yeah.
And see, and then you get the desensitizing lubricant, and then you know what I'm saying? He liked to hear that kind of stuff.
Right. And then, even though Mike Jones doesn't come out and say it, toward the end, the way Mike Jones puts it is that Haggard sought some kind of a spiritual connection with him. What I'm hearing here and reading between these paragraphs is that Haggard began to kind of fall in love with Mike Jones. And, you know, he would question about
evil man love.
What kind of love?
Evil man love.
Evil man love. Questioning him about his clients and, you know, what was his life like and his hopes and his family. And, you know, it moved.
He was a witness into it.
Yeah. But, you know, it's just kind of funny.
Oh, I got it. Okay, we're getting Mike on the show. That's all there is to it. I'm sure he'll be more than happy to hustle the book.
Yeah, I'm sure he would. I think the book just now came out. And
I don't, you know, and I'm sure they'll be happy to provide me a copy. I'm going to make sure I read this thing in a very public place.
Okay. It's called I Had to Say Something by Mike Jones.
And I got a feeling as I'm turning the pages, I'm going to be saying things too.
No doubt.
Okay, so I've got Mr. Uhl. Mr.
Right.
Uhl.
He was the student with the bombs.
Yes. The Liberty bomber.
Yes, right.
It is MySpace page, even as we speak. His first friend, I didn't even know he had a MySpace page. His first friend, Peter, is Jesus Christ.
Jesus is on MySpace?
I'm hoping, you know, I don't know if Jesus will add me as a friend or not.
He's got bandwidth, dude.
Oh, and here we are just squirreling along with 1.5 down, 384 up. And imagine the godlike bandwidth that Christ Jesus has.
Holy bandwidth.
Oh yeah.
God.
I mean, it's a series of tubes. So that's his first friend. You know how you fill out all the survey stuff on your personality index and stuff on MySpace, Peter?
Yeah, it's a little bit.
Okay, well, the Falwell bomber would like to meet. You remember the who I'd like to meet part?
Yes. I had no idea what to put in there.
Yeah, mine's really nasty on my MySpace page. But this one, he'd like to meet Jesus.
Really? Well, we could help him with that.
Yeah, King David.
Yeah, King David.
Okay. St. Paul.
Paul, really? Paul.
Walt Disney.
Walt Disney.
Osama.
Osama, okay.
Plato.
And Plato.
Benjamin Franklin.
This guy really needs a mental enema.
Alexander the Great.
Uh-huh.
Winston Churchill. General Douglas MacArthur.
Uh-huh.
Diogenes.
You know, he's a little pompous, too.
Yeah, a little bit. And the guy who invented the double cheeseburger.
Wasn't that Roy Kroc from the McDonald's family?
Jeez, I don't know. I figured it was some guy working at the Greyhound station.
Was it Ray Kroc?
Ray, yeah. Okay, now the movie list.
Okay.
The 10 movies that define who I am. Now, remember, this is the let's call him the Mooney Bomber, because after all, it was Mooney University. The 10 movies that define who I am. Number one, the Notebook. Can't talk about it. Agnes loves it.
Precious movie. It was just precious. I cried my little heart out.
Okay. Number two, Mel Gibson in The Patriot.
Ew.
Three, Finding Nemo.
Oh, my God.
Oh, is that what they're calling it these days?
Oh, there's another promo. Number four, The Boondocks Saints. No idea.
Me either.
Number five, The Lion King.
Uh-huh.
You know, with all that Elton John music in it.
Uh-huh, yeah, it's true. Elton John really is huge in that.
Which, by the way, if you go and you find, by the way, also at MySpace, a wonderful little page of a buddy of mine, Critter Opus with a K, K-R-I-T-T-E-R-O-P-U-S.
Uh-huh.
The video is there for The Circle of Life.
Really?
Yeah, and the guy who is doing, it's black and white, and the guy who is playing the cartoonist.
Yeah.
Is my best buddy the librarian.
Really?
Yeah.
How cool.
And he's such a cat person. He got to play with a real lion cub.
Oh, how wonderful.
In shooting the video. Yeah. Okay. Number six, Alice in Wonderland.
Uh-huh.
Seven, Fight Club.
Have you seen that? That's really a kind of a dark movie.
Yes, it is. Number 8, The Passion of the Christ.
Uh-huh.
Number 9, Beauty and the Beast.
Uh-huh.
Now, bear in mind that that thing has more gay overtones in it than Carter has little liver pills.
Yeah. Interesting how they're all interspersed together.
Yeah, and number 10, Peter, is Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Oh, Jesus. The outcast little reindeer with his little red nose.
Oh, yeah, but for me, it's all about when they get to the Island of Misfit Toys.
Yeah.
Nobody wants a Charlie in the box. Let's see. Television, I don't waste time watching television. Books, The Bible.
Yes.
The Little Prince. Green Eggs and Ham.
Green Eggs and Ham. Interesting. I wonder why he didn't mention, what is the Pilgrim's Progress? Now, that's a good children's, I mean, there's a children's version of that that's truly excellent.
God.
Here he is.
Let's see, television, I don't waste time watching television, right. His general comment, I will join the Army, all caps, as an officer after college. I also would like a family of my own someday.
Really? Yeah. I guess he was going to get some of those Iraqi kids that could kill their parents.
Sick. But this, he was going to bomb Fred Phelps.
Yeah, he was going to bomb Fred Phelps.
And he just had to brag. Just had to brag to the family.
Yeah.
If he hadn't bragged, nobody would have called the cops.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, wait a minute. That's really mean of me.
But that's what they're all about, Bob, enforcing God's will, and they will be quick to tell you exactly what it is.
Because God's mute and can't speak for himself.
Oh, yeah. And as if he needs their help.
Oh. Finding Nemo. Doesn't that, I've watched it a couple of times. Doesn't that have some overtones?
Well,
of being who you are and individuality.
Well, it did. In fact, there was one of those little holy rollers, probably one of the Colorado ones, claiming it was gay. That it was too gay. Or what? Didn't one of the fish? Wasn't he a little sweet?
Not for me to say.
I see.
Okay, Agnes says he was a little sweet.
He was. Okay. Well, I think the fish had a little sugar in his tank.
Yeah, okay. But I mean, this... Walt Disney? He wants to meet Walt Disney and Osama bin Laden?
But Walt's dead, right?
Well, most of him, his head's frozen.
Oh, dear God. He probably wants to meet Sam Walton, too.
I mean, this is two stories about sick MySpace pages inside of 3 days. Here's the Mooney Bomber, and then 2 days ago I was listening to our good buddy Mike Malloy, and I hear this story about Dr. Laura Schlesinger's son.
Oh yes, now that was scandalous.
All these years she's been talking about her little darling Derek.
Yeah.
Well, little darling Derek turns out to be a psychopath.
Well, he certainly does. And that page was absolutely scandalous, complete with cartoons and drawing, and there was supposed to be even a little boy.
And circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was all about sex acts and rape.
I mean, there are things that he describes... he talks about like a hotter than a Fallujah barbecue.
Ah, oh, yes, he did.
And he's got a picture of a bound, tortured Iraqi that's captioned, "My little Habib."
Yeah. And that was there was one that was being forced to perform a sex act. It was very disturbing. I have not actually seen it. I understand the page has been taken down.
Yeah.
But I have read about it. And then Laura responds with some sort of rant today going on about how she didn't want to hear anybody whining about her son and that her son was in a combat zone and risked his life every day. And how dare you whine about my son? I don't whine when he calls me. Blah, 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 blah. She's still featuring him as the hero.
Oh, God. Yeah, and her publicist released a statement that said, Oh, God, where is it? Yeah. We hope all news media outlets will respect his privacy for his safety and the safety of those serving with him.
Yeah, right.
Oh, God. But, you know, she has bragged about him for 20 years now.
Yeah, well, she said in the interview or in her response today, too, that she raised him to be a soldier. Boy, she turned out a good one, didn't she? Evil little son of a bitch.
Yeah, you know what? Literally.
Yeah, literally.
Although that's going kind of hard on the female dogs in the world.
Yeah.
This is just astonishing stuff. But the thing is, there is an undercurrent here, Peter. There's more to it than meets the eye. Last week we were having a fit about the Army announcing that it was shutting down military access to MySpace.
Oh, yeah, they sure are.
Because, you know, they were all concerned about how, you know, the military secrets will get out and, you know, they'll see the big board, and you can't let them see the big board.
Right.
And then they'll give away all our strategery. And a lot of military families were very upset because this is how they get videos of their loved ones, because we all know that you can't email a video.
Right. Oh, yeah, the attachment size. Yeah, it's a huge problem.
So, you know, a lot of military families very upset about it, and so I think what it boils down to, and this is a little bit too tinfoil hat, but maybe not, the military knows that this filth is out there, and if you go to Google, you can find videos of minarets being blown up and people being shot for the hell of it, and mosques being just blown all to hell, and soldiers giggling about it. There was another video we saw of soldiers. They had a group of little Iraqi children around them, you know, who were just sort of dancing and carrying on, and the soldiers had them chanting, F Iraq, F Iraq. Only it wasn't just F, okay?
Yeah.
And just that, that's funny. Look at them little Hodges saying F Iraq.
Yeah.
And Google is filled with it, and MySpace is filled with it. And I think that this has very little to do about access, about military personnel's access to the media, so much as it does our access to military viewpoints on what they're doing, where they're doing it. This isn't about the military. This is about the civilian population at home, in other words.
Exactly. I completely agree with you. And there are no secrets being let out, unless the secret is outright, unbelievably cruel conduct. And that's hardly a secret anymore, after Abu Ghraib.
Right. Well, Peter, I'm going to roll on here. Thank you so much.
Oh, I enjoyed it, Bob.
It's always a blast.
I'll talk to you soon.
All right, later.
Bye.
Bye. And quickly to our good friend Luke. Hey, Luke, welcome to the program.
Evening, Bob.
How are you?
Oh, just having a wonderful evening.
Did you catch Olbermann's special comment yet?
It is on as we speak.
Oh, I'll have to stay up to watch it.
I've got the tape player running, so when I'm done with you, I'll back it up, watch it, and listen to it this time. I sent you some emails that Agnes may have looked at by now, and if she has, she's probably laughing her head off. We have some new Darwin Award nominees.
I saw the one about the state trooper.
Well, that's the first one. There's three different things.
That happened in Tennessee. It's another one of those thank God I'm in West Virginia moments, but no.
Well, let's put it this way. The third one was the best one. When people down where we are comparing him and using the name Barney Fife in the same sentence, it's not a good time.
Now, this is a state trooper who just got busted for allegedly...
Well, that's the first
one. Right.
Now, the first one got allegedly busted because... And the beauty of it was, it's caught on his camera, on his cruiser.
Oh, God.
And,
well, that'll
be. A young lady was caught apparently doing over 90 in a 70 zone, and she, did a Monica for him, apparently, or along those lines.
Yeah, and it'll be on YouTube soon enough.
Yeah. Then we've had this one where another one of our crack highway patrolmen shot his mother in the foot. They were having some kind of argument, and it's supposedly an accident.
Nip it!
No, that's not the Barney Fife moment. Number three. State Highway Patrolman is apparently at the office, I'm assuming. I haven't read all of it yet. We're at the office, and he's cleaning his gun. And manages to shoot another officer in the foot.
Hmm.
So, you know, I'm a layman. I know the basics of gun, but, you know,
I speak gun, yeah.
Pull it out, I thought, before you started cleaning it. You know, I really did.
Barney, give me the bullet. Just give me the bullet, Barney.
You know, it's like if it's a revolver, okay, there's six chambers, you can see it. If it's an automatic, you take out the clip and you clear the one in the chamber.
Well, the darn thing...
I don't have a gun, and I know this.
The darn thing's not... I mean, if they're using, like, a Glock or something with a 40 Smith & Wesson round, the semi-autos, the modern semi-autos, aren't supposed to fire if there's a round in the chamber and the clip's out.
That's the thing that gets to me. As we've said...
That pretty much means this genius was cleaning his gun with the clip in.
That's the only thing I could figure. But the beauty of it is, they asked the governor about it, and he essentially said, I'm going to wait for them to complete their investigation. I think if anybody out there is listening to us would like to be a highway patrol officer, there will be a few openings soon.
Oh, my God. Luke, thanks for that, brother.
All right.
Got to roll. Bye now. And program note, one, I'm out of here Thursday and Friday because the desperate trip to Alabama is finally going to come off. Monday's Memorial Day. No programming. And so we'll catch you all on Tuesday. Okay? Hope you have a wonderful Memorial Day weekend. Stay safe, because the highways are going to be full of state troopers, just like the three that our buddy Luke just described, okay? So be careful, and remember, 52% of traffic accidents in America are caused by sober people. So, you know, watch out for the other guy. Meanwhile, many thanks to Agnes and her assistant producer, Miss Liza, who you may have heard in the background. Thanks to our engineer, John Fox, our IT professional, Peter Godbold, the hardest working man in liberal talk, Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org, who needs your help with his fundraiser, please. That's it. Yeah, oh, and thanks to the United Brotherhood of Carpenters, who helped us get this network started. And by building the American dream and helping us save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
This is the Quality News Network. The Iraqi police dragged a body clad in a U.S. military uniform out of the Euphrates River today. DNA tests will be conducted to see if it is one of the three soldiers ambushed 11 days ago. A second body was found along the riverbank near the first one. Newly declassified intelligence reveals that Osama bin Laden is setting up terrorist cells in Iraq as a base of operations to carry out attacks on a global scale, American soil being the top target on the list. President Bush spoke at a U.S. Coast Guard graduation ceremony saying, quote, 9/11 was just a down payment on violence yet to come, end quote. Two explosions occurred outside of Baghdad today. In a coffee shop, a suicide bomber killed 20 people. Elsewhere, a car bomb blew up in a parking lot, and it killed three civilians. The latest war funding bill is now in Congress. It could be called War Funding Light. The funding will last through the end of the fiscal year, September 30th, and contains less pork. Laborers would applaud one particular rider, a federal minimum wage raise, the first one in 10 years. Nine U.S. Navy warships, including two aircraft carriers, arrived today off the coast of Iran. 17,000 U.S. sailors and Marines will conduct exercises to demonstrate the U.S.'s commitment to security in the Persian Gulf. The Pentagon may double the number of U.S. combat forces in Iraq this year, and current tours of duty would be extended. The fight continues to rage on in Lebanon as the stakes intensify. Fatah al-Islam fighters have vowed not to give up in defiance of the Lebanese army, which has offered the militants a choice between arrest or death. 15,000 civilians have fled the refugee camp in fear for their lives. The fighting is